I won't.
Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, stand for. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really. Show www.thematthewaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, and I'm on Facebook at Matthew Aaron. You can find me there. We have a lot to talk about. We have Jim McCarron's on the show today, former executive at CBS. CBS for 17 years, and now he's a consultant, does a lot of things for the television industry.
I'm Lee Capreas. Hello.
Lee Capreas.
Mike Fricano.
Mikey Fricano. Pat DiStefano's around. We didn't give him a mic.
No.
We were smart.
Probably
today.
Better that way.
Yeah, we're smart. So do you want to read Billy Bob Tim's emails?
Yeah, I think that'll be a nice cold shower to start this show.
For those who are listening for the first time, second time, maybe they missed some previous episodes, Billy Bob Tim is related to me. And he is a hardcore... I don't even know if Republican is the right word. Conservative, right?
Right.
I don't know. I don't even know what's the word
Listen,
for him.
He's so far to the right of anything that Richard Nixon would have imagined.
Yeah. Well, basically, here's a quote to some of Billy Bob. Billy Bob said to me once, Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck are American patriots,
uh-huh.
and we should watch what we say about American patriots.
Right.
So Here's Billy Bob Tim commenting on the Casey Anthony trial. OJ was innocent too, right? And umpires make the right call all the time. What's great about all this is that our country allows it to happen. If you continue to elect morons like Barack Obama, you're going to lose these rights. What does that mean?
Yeah, I just hearing that a second time.
Decipher this code, could you?
I'm not even sure what that means.
It doesn't make sense.
How does electing Obama relate to a woman being found not guilty by a jury of her peers?
No clue.
In a murder trial.
No clue. No clue. I think Fricano's confused, too. He doesn't even know what to say.
Is it just me? Here's the thing. Is it just me, or do people on the right fetishize murder and violence and revenge?
Well, they just like blaming everything on any powerful liberal they could find.
Right.
Which I don't feel we do as often as liberals, but maybe that's me being biased.
No.
Whatever.
No, but so there's a girl that died, and that's the most horrific thing imaginable. But
it's Barack Obama's
fault. But anyone, the person being tried, they did it. Like, someone has to have gone down, and it's some kind of...
Well, I think he tried to make a better point in the second one. Maybe I should read that.
Read
one.
Another.
Go ahead, Mike.
You're looking at it that she was found not guilty by her peers, and these are, the average Americans that probably believe Glenn Beck is a patriot. They could sit there and watch all of this.
I don't know all
and
the
still find her not guilty.
I don't know all the details of the case, so
well,
maybe
well,
she did it. I don't know.
Let's give. I know a lot of the details of the case, and
you just have to think for a couple seconds
that she's not guilty. It was a joke. Here's the reason: she wasn't guilty because she was on TV. Let's put it as basic as that. It is. It really comes down to that. And the only reason people care is because it was on TV.
Right.
This happens every day in America. People kill their children all the fucking time, unfortunately.
And they go to jail and get...
And it happens every day, and no one's outraged.
Right.
They're outraged because it was on the boob tube.
It was on the boob tube, and the girl is, like, young and good-looking.
Well, I'm going to give Billy Bob a chance here because I think he tries to make a better point here.
Right.
I don't know if it works. We'll find out. Mm-hmm.
By the way, this discussion is lose-lose.
Yeah, it's lose-lose here. For all of you out there that wonder how a woman like Casey Anthony can be found not guilty in this case, think about this. You elect people that make it legal to murder small children every day in their support of abortion. There really isn't much difference, is there?
Does that mean that the murder is legal?
Does that mean that does that mean that
you're saying we murder people?
The murder, the murder that happened.
Abortion
to
is murder.
The murder that happened to the poor little girl was just a really, really late term abortion.
Yes. He is basically.
You could
saying,
laugh. It's funny.
He's basically comparing this to abortion. He is comparing it to abortion, saying 20 months in your stomach, you get aborted, is the same thing that the fact that this kid was like one or two is crawling around and learning her first words, and she put chloroform over her face and duct taped her and threw her into a allegedly.
Right.
And threw her into a hole in the ground somewhere. Same exact thing.
Where's the cutoff?
I can find Casey Anthony's child in a dumpster out back from some abortion clinic is what he's saying, I think.
Right, absolutely.
I think I can go dig it up right now.
Yeah.
Oh, there she is.
Yep.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Lose-lose.
Lose-lose.
Abortion, politics,
cut. Boy, when are we going to start the show? Oh, boy.
Let's see what else. And then Billy Bob has a great recipe on bacon popovers.
Okay. You know what?
I got to be honest. We give Billy Bob a hard time, but his Facebook is one of the most entertaining things I've ever been on.
So,
and I'm not. That's not being.
So you will hear. So you will hear the climate in which Obama is linked to the acquittal of Casey Anthony, and then a bacon popover recipe right beside.
Yes.
I don't know, man. Your Facebook's pretty entertaining.
Mine's great. Thank you, Pat.
Well, I don't know about that. Don't want too many status updates, though.
Pat, introduce yourself.
I was going to get a plug.
Hi, I'm Pat Stefano.
Yeah, I'm Pat Stefano. Yeah,
Go to Mr. Beef and Pizza in North Harlem.
Ding, ding,
ding.
Anyway, but your Facebook is pretty entertaining. There's a status update. What do you think? Every 20 seconds, 30 seconds, give or take?
Listen, I'm all over the Facebook. Hey, you know what? It's better to be me and have something to say and be all over the Facebook than Len Cannata.
Leave the basement and do something.
No, Cannata's on
Facebook. You're on Facebook all day stalking the little girls. I know what you're doing.
You and Cannata are on Facebook 24/7. You just have nothing to say.
I did catch you looking at a 15-year-old Facebook page.
And what Len has to say really isn't much. It's not very funny. It's I woke up today and got a car wash.
I know. Lenny's
Thank you so much. I was wondering if you were up this morning taking your car wash.
My favorite Lenny post.
Billy Bob reached out to Pat to change the subject.
He did. But but since we're there, my favorite Lenny posts are, I'm getting my hair cut. Which hair?
Yeah.
Like three left. I'm getting my hair cut.
Why are you telling people that? You should just leave it alone and be happy that you still have the hair and don't let anybody know that you're losing
or
hair.
Or he just always posts pictures of him drinking. That's it.
Like ooh.
Yeah, look, I'm old enough to buy booze.
Right.
Oh, here we go.
If you can still...
Well, you know, Matt, the girls that you're talking to on Facebook cannot buy booze.
Oh, Jesus. You're going to ride this till it's still not funny.
All right, anyway.
Oh, it's really funny. Really funny. Mike's rolling around on the ground over here laughing.
Can I go back to Billy Bob?
Anyway, back to Billy Bob. We got to...
How much more should millionaires contribute to our corrupt government? They provide jobs, pay for health care,
I don't know,
and do more for the country than anyone in government service. If I was one of them, I'd probably consider leaving the country right now because of our idiot president of the United States.
Fuck.
Millionaires are not doing enough, Lee.
Yeah.
They're not doing it. Asshole millionaires.
Oh,
they're just too nice. Too nice. They need to get out of this country because they're getting raped, says Billy Bob.
Right. Because they are the...
They could go to Afghanistan. It's a lovely place out there.
Send them there. Let's see how
maybe where all those poor kids are out there fighting are doing a little bit more for this country than the millionaires sitting in his office flying their jets.
But where did he get
this? They should be in Dubai because that, like... That is now the epicenter of evil capitalism that trying to instruct people.
I just want to know, where is Billy Bob getting this that millionaires are doing so much for the country?
Because
have you watched Fox News?
All of the pundits and people...
I bet he does watch Fox Money. Fox Business. I bet
he watches Fox
Business. Yeah.
They just wake up in the morning.
You know what, though, Fox, they're a little too left-leaning for me. They put that...
They're not the Drudge
they
Report.
They put that Greta Van Susteren on, and I don't know where she is.
Yeah, he's not that nice Matt Drudge fella. Yeah, how come they don't rip on Greta for being a lesbian?
I don't know.
I don't think that's allegedly, by the way. I think she's out of the closet, isn't she?
I think so. Or that she's a moderate.
I should look this up.
She's a moderate who had a facelift.
For this moment, I'm going to say Greta is allegedly lesbian.
How
do you know what
her being that could stand staying working there?
Do you know what Al Franken said about her?
Bashes
because those people are insane. Yeah, I don't know how she would be able to stand. Okay.
Al Franken has a joke that he saw her standing next to Connie Chung at a party and that he couldn't tell them apart.
Can I tell you some of these funny things when I Googled Greta Van Susteren lesbian? Okay, this is from someone on RatedAll.com.
Yeah.
So someone rated her lesbianism. Greta is a raging lesbian. Crazy that it has not become public info yet. Greta, stop lying to us.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. So I guess it's not out. Okay, so allegedly, Greta Van Susteren may have had lesbian affairs in her lifetime.
Right.
I don't. Yeah. Sound engineer filling in for Adam Steve says she may munch the carpet.
Yeah, she's a vegetarian.
Which is cool. We're down with that. But I do want to know how lesbians or gays could, like Mike Fricano said, how can they even work at Fox News?
First of all, most of these right-wing people, the most hardcore anti-gay people, they all these guys, Charlie Crist, the fucking guy in the bathroom.
Oh, yeah, Charlie Crist. Charlie Crist.
Ken Melman, all these guys.
Allegedly Charlie Crist. We
all these
get that
guys
out there.
That vote that way.
I don't need to get sued by Charlie Crist.
What's he going to do? Try to spray his fake tan on you?
You know what I think's great? The moment he tries to sue me, all his boyfriends will come out of the closet. They'll be like, oh, no. So you want another Billy Bob?
Yeah, let me ask you a question.
Back to the millionaires, though. Go ahead.
Does he use onions in this bacon popover recipe?
I haven't read the recipe.
Okay.
It looks outstanding.
All right.
Billy Bob, Tim.
He probably puts one drop of his bile in it. That's why it tastes so good.
Here's a status from 7 hours ago. If I offend some of you, I'm not sorry. Global warming is a hoax. I'm so glad that you believe in something like this. It warms my heart, LOL, get it, it's a pun, that people could actually believe that human beings could actually affect what happens onto the Earth. Are you all really that fucking stupid?
I don't understand any of that comment because it's science. Secondly, we talked about how all of us believe something that humans are affecting.
Here's what Billy Bob says to you about the science. Show me the science.
They all say that. I don't get it. They got reports out all over the place. But at the same time, you have hundreds and millions of people walking around believing in things that are in the sky that they can't see. But you can go to Gary, Indiana, and you see all the crap that's going in the air. Obviously, that's not good.
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah, I don't want to live
if you produce giant, because of the air, I don't want to live in Gary.
Everything else is glorious. But it's bokeh.
No, but wait a minute. Here's what I don't like. If you produced science and showed it to him, if you had documents or links to websites, is he going to read it? And if he does, is he going to consider it?
No. This is just funny.
This is somebody who makes up his mind before he hears the issue.
Are Americans really so stupid that they would believe the current president of the United States says that he has said tax rates are the lowest since Reagan? Are you really that stupid? Well, I have a graph that I'm looking at.
Right.
I can pull it up right now. That basically proves Obama's right about that.
Taxes have went down under Obama for middle class people.
They've definitely gone down since Bush.
Yes.
And the proposed tax plan Obama wants to have, which they can't pass, is basically if you're a lower class or middle class person in that income range, you are going to have to pay thousands of less in taxes. Thousands of less. If it's only when you hit $300,000 that you will be paying more in taxes. And by the way, the number is anywhere from $4,000 to $7,000 if you make more than $300,000.
You know what? Fucking pay those taxes, you rich pricks.
America's but the rich are doing too much.
They are. They're not. They're not paying these taxes. Have you ever read – if I produced a book, is he going to read it? I've got books that show – specifically how the system is rigged to benefit the richest people and cheat everybody else. Is he going to read that book?
No.
No.
But this is my favorite, and this is for all Republicans. This is not just to Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, I got to find it here. If we were going to bail on Iraq, let's just do it quickly. We are losing too many people while enemies know we're on the way out and not interested in winning. Isn't that what Obama doesn't want after all? Dems don't care about winning wars, just getting reelected.
Right. I don't know Republicans.
Now I love how he's telling us to leave Iraq.
Right.
Republicans, months ago, were like, we must stay.
Right.
Now they want us to leave.
Well,
but now they want us to leave.
They want us
so
to
they
leave
can prove we're leaving
because the,
Obama's
party that lost the election by 8 million votes didn't get bin Laden. Oh, well, you know, we shouldn't really be there.
They did get bin Laden. I mean,
yeah. And Mike, you're involved in politics. You're involved in politics. How do you feel about now Republicans wanting to leave all these wars?
Right. It's all political games.
That's horseshit.
That's all it is. It's exactly that they want to get a victory. They want to say that Obama's the reason that we lost, and then they can come home and not be happy. You know, we lost a war, and we lost a war because of Barack Obama.
Right. Well, we need to say something funny right now.
Well, here's what's funny. And Pat Tobias got a hold of me. One, Bill Maher is unavailable for interviews.
Okay.
I'm very disappointed in that.
I am too.
Not many people have turned us down.
He's very busy.
He's got to do Anderson Cooper 4 times a week.
Right.
And Pat also said, enough with Obama. It's bad enough he controls the country. Now he has to control the Matthew Aaron show.
Oh, Obama, what are you going to get wrong next?
I don't understand what he could do right. Like him killing Bin Laden, he didn't do it.
Bush killed Obama, too. He set it up.
How was it possible that he can ruin America and this show at the same time?
He's good.
The man
is
so
good. He's so evil that he can ruin everything going on. Boom, 2 birds, one stone. Oh, you know, this is what happens. DeStefano comes over, and he just yaps. You got ADD, you know.
I already shushed him.
Guess who's here? Would you go get your fat fuck friend? Both of you can go talk with him outside.
He's sitting right across from me.
Oh,
look at that long hair. They look like handlebars. Cut your hair. Shave it.
Your jokes are bombing today.
They're
really bad.
They're not bombing.
You're like Dennis Miller.
How are they
bad
bombing
today? How are they bombing? You just said my hair is handlebars.
Because he rolls out like
that's true.
Words.
He's like the Dr. Seuss to Dennis
I'm
Miller.
I'm talking to Alex, and I wasn't talking to you.
Okay, listen. If Alex has something good to say, Alex would tell me, not you. So
Pat,
I wouldn't even.
Pat, yeah. Do you know why I would cash in your chips and fold the hand? Because you're playing cards and you got one in your hand. Just one.
Oh. And I never lose, so it's okay.
No.
That's what you get with a bunch of guys in a basement.
Yeah, well, you get nudity, and yeah, we're gayer than AIDS down here.
All right, listen. All right.
Wonderful. It's like Chuck Salvatore's house here.
So just because there's a whole bunch of people in the basement, we're all talking, we're all dudes, we're going to sword fight with our cocks later.
Hey, that's what it's all about.
All right, anyway, so do you want to write Billy Bob a response email, or you just want to read more?
I want Billy Bob to call in when Annabelle Gurwitch is on tomorrow.
Oh,
that's
I don't know
what
how
I
you respond to those posts, though.
No, they're all
they're
I
so
say.
All in different areas. Like, you'd have to write
I
a paragraph.
I just say asshole things to him. I go, yes, I'm that stupid.
I hear.
And then that's it.
But isn't Annabelle kind of cranky? Do you really want to make her that mad?
She's only going
to
get mad
at
Billy Bob.
Argue with Billy Bob?
She's only mad at Billy Bob.
Why the fuck am I on this show?
Hey, Lenny, would you tell these two fucks they talk so loud? No, these two fucks.
No, these two.
The one that showed his ass. Yeah, yeah, that one. And, oh, fuck.
Matt, we are in a meeting. Do not disturb our meeting over here. Comprende?
All right.
You and your show.
A right. Meeting.
Yeah, fuck you and your people that have been in movies on your show.
Lee, I want to apologize that we're doing a show at this time.
I know. It was very rude of us to interrupt you.
You should only be so lucky. We're meeting in your basement.
I think.
Yeah. You can't get rid of him. That's the problem.
Fucking Italian.
Yeah. Hey, what kind of beef you got there, Lenny?
All right.
Oh, from Teddy's Red Hot.
Come on, Mr. Beef and Harlem.
Teddy's Red Hot. Sing Teddy's Red Hot. Only the best beef in the Chicagoland area. It's a good beef, says Lenny. That's good to know.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
It's better than that Mr. Beef, the cardboard they dip in the grease and put it on your sandwich. Oh, you know what I love about Dick Portillo? Everything.
He's got a great name.
Yeah, he's got a great name. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Pat says last week on the show, you know why he sells so many beefs? He's got a great name.
Yeah.
Oh. No, it has nothing to do with the quality of the food.
Yeah.
Lee, go ahead. You got some topic, I'm sure, rattling in your head. Or you're just majorly annoyed.
My head is swimming. I swear to God, if this show...
Welcome to my life.
If this show was a person, like it was represented in a human form, it would be on the beach wearing a tiny G-string and a gold chain. That's what it would be. Fucking... Doesn't matter if Pat doesn't talk. I can hear the oil in his hair settle.
He's only like a quarter Italian.
Oh.
Don't tell. Yeah, Pat doesn't want that getting out. Yeah.
No, right. He's actually Bulgarian. Yeah. That's the crazy thing, probably.
He's a hairy-ass bastard, though.
Oh, God. All right.
Boy, I am kind of hating life right now. This is good.
All
right,
so.
Why do I even do a show?
Were you going to read one more thing from Billy Bob?
Oh,
trying to keep us on task.
Yeah, we're
all right. Let's. All right.
I think we've bored people enough between Pat and Billy Bob.
Right.
I think we've lost every listener we had.
Right. Even those Bieber fans who were so critical at the outset
when,
of the show.
When am I going to hear another Mr. Beef commercial? Those are the best on the Matthew Aaron
show. What if I never hear about Italian beef
again? What if I never hear about his frozen mozzarella sticks and frozen potatoes ever again?
Oh,
what are you doing? Well, don't be pointing to me. Don't be pointing to me over there. We're plugging Mr. Beef and you're pointing at me. Oh.
All right. Yeah. Anyway.
Did I tell you that our gelato is really Breyer's ice cream? I scoop it all out myself and put it in the bin. Those hamburgers, not those Bubba burgers, I'll tell you that. I go to Aldi. $1 for ground beef that's 5 pounds. It's all gray, but you know what? It cooks a mean burger.
It's all hooves. Oh, boy. Okay. Why don't you say...
Billy Bob messaged me.
Oh, all right.
Don't be dissing Portillo's asswipe. So he missed the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, without a doubt.
I love that.
Without a doubt.
He missed the first 20.
That's
basically
great.
Being like he's an idiot.
How could he not have mentioned it? How could he not have mentioned that on the show? It hasn't even been edited out yet. Anyway,
that's
too
good.
It hasn't
been edited out yet.
I
don't know
what
you speak of, Lee.
Anyway,
editing?
Not
on a free cable, not on a free web show with uncensored content. What would be edited?
Yeah, possibly. Oh, all right.
Balls are being busted.
Do you guys want to play a game?
Yeah. Well, we got 2 minutes before we go to a song and Jim McCarron.
All right.
You want to save the game for after?
We'll save the game
for
after.
Worth?
We'll save
the game. Oh, the Twitter game you got.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, look forward to this, folks, after the interview. It's going to be
after
good.
After the interview, we're going to play a little
Twitter.
We
got a little
Twitter
game. Lee's been posting on Twitter his phony Taliban tweets, but one of them's real.
Right.
So Lee's going to play a game with Fricano and I to see which one's the real
one. The real one, okay.
Yeah, but we got like a minute and a half here. What do you want to talk about? Anything in a minute and a half? Oh, Men of a Certain Age season finale tonight.
Oh, I watched.
So I hope you're taping it.
I watched the pilot.
You watched the first episode.
Yeah.
How'd you feel?
I liked it. It was good.
Well written, right?
Yeah, well written.
And they're not afraid to be depressing.
They're not afraid to be depressing.
Not at all.
I'll tell you what I liked about it is that it wasn't trying too hard to be witty and super clever.
And the acting's so good because it's so subtle.
It is.
None of those guys are trying to eat scenery.
Right, right.
None of them.
I'm a huge fan of...
How good was Bakula?
He's good. I'm a huge fan of minimalism and subtlety.
And this is the show.
And that show is great.
This show
is
The Wire of men with midlife crisis.
I really... On the show, I really like Andre Brower.
Yeah. He's fantastic.
So good.
Well, and then after you hear those...
One of them.
Yeah, when you hear those stories from Mike Royce about Andre Brower naked, too, you can't get that image out of your head.
No.
Why would you want to get that image
but
out
like,
of your
honestly,
head?
But, like, honestly, like, watch that show, and then I'll go back and listen to the Royce interview again, and it'll have new meaning for me.
I know I got tons of people to now watch the show, but I did get one person that said they will never watch the show now because I won't shut the fuck up about it. They're on strike.
All right. In all fairness, you do need to kind of shut up about it.
Listen! It's a great television show! Right. It can't get canceled, Lee.
It's not going to be canceled.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I've been plugging the shit out
of it. Yeah, but you don't want
it
to go... Listen, you don't want it to go on for 7-8 seasons and lose it.
4 or 5 would be nice.
Yeah, because it's going to lose...
Two.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I feel about Chuck.
Yeah, Chuck's been on a little too long.
Yeah.
Been a little too long.
Yeah.
Oh, that fucking DeStefano. Can we go to a break? We're going to play a song.
Listen.
And we're going to interview Jim McCarron after the song.
You guys got to...
And while we interview Jim McCarron, everyone's going to shut the fuck up.
You guys got to use your church voices. This is not a fucking joke. I say.
And you're just...
Yeah.
All right, we're back. I'm about to call Jim McCarron.
All right, Jim.
Jim McCarron's for a brief summary. He was a journalist for many a year, and then he became a network executive over at CBS and has some very interesting stories. Very funny guy, very witty, good times. Lenny's trying to unplug everybody's headphones. What are you doing? Are you destroying my show?
I like how he's trying to unplug the ones that are there and replace them with exactly the same kind of ones.
Right. Now, I don't know if mine are plugged in. Okay, good.
All right, good.
You keep me up here, Steve. I'm afraid what these guys are going to do.
I don't know. They got covered in beef juice.
So let's call Jim now.
All right, Jim.
And Lenny is going to be in charge of keeping those two quiet.
Yeah,
Heckle and Jekyll.
Hasn't been doing so good a good job so far, but that's okay. Maybe they don't think that this is an actual show. Maybe they think
they don't think we're on.
We're
they
kidding,
like
and they don't understand that people can hear their fucking voice.
So we're on a major Fisher Price set, and we're just playing.
Right.
We play radio.
Huh? Like,
why do you think they keep them around?
When
you fucking eat all my oatmeal cream pies.
Love Train.
Oh, I love Train. Hey, Jim, how you doing? Jim McCarron.
Doing very well, Matt. How are you?
On the Matthew Aaron Show. Well, we're talking oatmeal cream pies.
Did you play that song on my for my benefit?
Oh, are you a fan?
If you check my Facebook profile, you'll see that I took a train trip across the continent of Australia last year, and I did a little slideshow when I was done, and I put it to that music. So I thought you were doing that for my benefit.
Well, I guess we are now. Yes, of course I did. Of course I did.
Train trip, three and a half days in length. The average age on the train was dead.
Oh, wow.
Jim, you're a big fan of Australia, aren't you?
Huge fan of Australia. I had a wonderful time on that trip, but honest to God, I sat down for dinner once. I went by myself. I sat down for dinner. They seat you with whomever, right?
Yeah.
And the youngest person at the table besides me was 88 years old.
Oh, wow.
She was traveling with her 92-year-old brother.
Well, you know what? You never have that problem in America. People don't live to be that old.
No. We're not that old.
You've never been thirstier than when you're standing behind a 92-year-old man in a narrow corridor on a train trying to get to the bar car.
Oh, man. God, that should go on a mausoleum something.
I was just at Ultra Foods the other day, and there was this old woman in line in front of me, and she wrote a checkout for like $4.40, and
right.
It took forever. And I was just so mad. I totally understand that.
Right.
I was really fired up.
And I think I'm such a like an old soul, because I'm always the oldest person seeing the Woody Allen movie. But, man.
Well, you're the only person seeing the Woody Allen movie. But
I was at an area. By the way, my favorite story about the train trip, which is not why I'm on tonight, but I have to tell you that it was so frustrating being in a sleeper car that was so small. When I got out at Adelaide at some point, I went on Facebook and I posted that there are seven layers to the human of the human skin. No, there are seven layers of human skin on the average body, and only six of them fit in my sleeping compartment.
Yeah, I took a train trip in Europe, and it was real small, and it's all bunks. There was like three bunks, so I was sleeping on the top, and I had two people, luckily ladies, sitting below me, and they told us not to leave our bunks, because at night, people are known for robbing you in the narrow hallways.
Yeah. Lovely.
They had lots of crime in Europe at that time, I guess.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Apparently on the trains as well.
Well, they also have more crime in Downers Grove than Chicago, but that's neither here nor there. Lenny's late.
Speaking of which, I'm glad you're there, and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah,
thank you for coming on.
I'm glad I'm here, too. Not really. I wish I was there. But, Jim, why don't you tell for all our listeners, you know, I've kind of given them a rundown, journalist, executive, but
right.
why don't you tell
right.
them how you got involved in the business through your journalism career?
Okay. I was a journalism graduate from Temple University in Philadelphia, where I was raised, and pretty much straight from commencement started work as a journalist on an entertainment magazine, which was great to be a working journalist, however much of a plebeian kind of job it was, but it was a working journalist, and it was for an entertainment magazine, which is my favorite subject, TV and movies and such. So I and that was in Tennessee, the wonderful city of Knoxville, Tennessee, and I'm not being sarcastic when I say that. I had a wonderful time living there. But after being there for about 5 or 6 years, I thought, I don't want to continue to write about television. I want to work in it. So I just packed up my car and sold my house and had my dog adopted and moved on out to California in a crowded Mazda GLC that was so packed that I couldn't I could only drive at night because it's the only time I knew that I could change lanes safely based on the headlights behind me because I couldn't see. Anyway, I got into L.A. and spent a couple years writing about the business and working as an assistant during the day and writing about the business at night and on the weekends. And I kept picking people that I wanted to network with as subject profiles for magazine pieces, if this is making sense. You're following me?
I know all about networking and doing interviews.
Well, I had a really good couple of magazines that didn't have a whole lot of contacts in L.A., so they said, if you bring us the articles and they're, you know, they have news value or it's about an interesting person, we'll publish them. So I looked around for people in TV that I wanted to work with or at least get to know and be exposed to did a lot of those interviews, the most important of which and significant of which was after 2 years of being in L.A. and, you know, not really being very successful other than just writing and making a buck a word and being an okay assistant and working only when there was a season to work in, I interviewed Norman Lear, who everybody should know. A lot of people today don't know as well as they should, and they should Google him the minute they're done listening to me and before your little Taliban Twitter contest. They should look up Norman Lear because he's an iconic name in television and certainly one of the most prolific and valuable and important TV producers in the history of the medium.
Yes.
I interviewed him for some of his comeback vehicles. He was trying 2 new shows in the early 90s, and we hit it off. And to make a long story even longer, he looked at me and he said, you know, you need to be working in television, not writing about it, because we had a really, really, really good interview. And I knew that was a moment that people tell you about, which is when a door opens, you push it open as far as you can. You know, when you have somebody sort of allowing you, you know, the benefit of exposure to them. I said, look, I'm trying to get a job in television. He said, what have you done about it? I told him I wrote a letter to the president of CBS. Now, mind you, I'm in my early 30s. I have zero credentials other than a love of television. And, you know, I guess I'm a smart enough guy, but, you know, a lot of it is credentials and who you know. And I had zero. He said, what have you done? I said, I wrote a letter to then head of CBS Entertainment. And he said, show me the letter. This is pre-email. So I went home and snail mailed him a copy of the letter. And a month later, I was in for an interview with the president of CBS based on Norman Lear's letter, which I have framed on my wall.
Wow.
Right. That's kind of like the equivalent today of if Kelly Call or Les Moonves had an interview with somebody. It's a big deal.
It's a big deal, and it's meeting the guy I wanted to work with, and it's set up by the guy whose shows I watched in the darkened basement of my Philadelphia row home year after year after year after year when I was young. So we're going for the darkened basement joke?
No. He said it was the best shows, Norman Lear.
Oh, right, of course. I could do the darkened basement joke too, but those were the shows you were watching when you were growing up. Except they were a little R-rated, so we had to watch them in the basement instead of the good TV in our living room upstairs.
You needed to watch Maude in the basement. Lenny needed to watch Cinemax in the basement. There was a little bit of a difference.
tomato. Yeah, my mother, God rest her soul, she was not an arch-conservative Catholic, but she was very much a believer in right and wrong, and there was an episode of Maude, either the one in which Maude had an abortion, which was landmark and controversial to begin with, or just one in which she called Walter, her husband on the show, a son of a bitch. My mother said, okay, the TV is off. I don't want that show on in my living room. You can watch it in the basement from now on. So Maude was relegated to the small black and white basement television. But there I am watching all those Norman Lear shows as a preteen and young kid. And then 20 years later, there's Norman Lear sending me a letter all of which I could quote at this point because I've read it so many times. It's framed on my wall. And then a month later, I got into an interview with the head of CBS, ultimately got a job, and I stayed 13 years.
Now, Jim, I've told people, I've told anyone that will listen to me, you have the best story about getting in the business. That's my favorite. However, do you have a favorite being unbiased? Is it not yours? Do you have another favorite? What's your favorite story about getting into the business? Because it's just you've taught me and you taught your class because I had a class with you. And it was my final class at DePaul. And one of the key things you taught people is, look, there are no applications to get in the business of entertainment. There's a huge ground floor. And you got to get in on the ground floor and network and, you know, get yourself in. But there's no applications. So what's one of your favorite stories you've heard about someone getting in the business?
By the way, it's only by virtue of the fact that I do teach the course. I hope to teach it again. I'm going to slightly tweak your interpretation of it because I think – in the building we call show business, which is TV or film or whatever. And by the way, some production jobs, you know, if you're going to go get a production job, some of those are listed. So it's not as if no other job in the history of television is listed or something you can apply for. But for people like you and me who wanted to get into the part of television we wanted to get into, there is no ground floor. It's just a tall building. What there is there's no door, there's no window on the ground floor. There's nothing except it begins on the first floor. And you see everybody in there, and you know that they're happy and working in television, and you know that they're busy and moving from floor to floor and from office to office and executive to executive and project to project, and you don't know how to get in because there's no door. So what you do is you look up above the first floor, the mezzanine, or above the ground floor, you go to the mezzanine, the first floor, whatever there is, you find a window that's open, and you make it bigger, and you crawl in. And that usually comes from meeting people, you know, meeting the right person at the right time.
No. And Lee, do you have anything to expunge on?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it seems like you're a fairly big believer in a lot of stuff. Is you have to be in the right place at the right time, and it's literally as simple as that.
It's both as simple and as complicated as that, because everybody that comes out here, including people who are working here years and years and years, such as myself, if you're between projects or if you're looking for that next gig. Or whatever, you have what you think are still the credentials. You're still waiting for that right place at the right time. It's kind of trite, and I don't want to get too allegorical on it. But you know, it's an intersection where that's equal parts luck, chance, opportunity, and talent. And you don't tend to know you're in that intersection until all of a sudden you find yourself in it. You find yourself sitting in a chair opposite Norman Lear.
Yeah.
And the bell goes off, and you said, this is what people have been telling you for 2 years, that you're going to find yourself at that intersection. And I was embarrassed beyond description at having to talk about myself to him, let alone ask for advice or help for that matter, because I don't do that very easily. And as I started to trip my way into a, can you help me, he smiled and he said something that should be repeated often and never forgotten. He smiled and he said, I know exactly what you're talking about, but you never get anything in this town unless you ask, so ask. And I said, I want to work at CBS, and I stayed there 13 years.
How's that not the best story ever, Lee?
Yeah, that's a great story.
Isn't that great?
Well, I mean, that really flies in the face of a lot of, I think, younger people coming up, not just in, like, just a lot of things related to show business where it's like, well, I'm just going to be so good that people are going to notice me, I'm going to get a call. Like a lot of comedians I see, I'm just going to go to so many open mics that I'm going to just get asked to do a club.
That's what happens all the time. Everybody, look, and that's why we are all needing to move out of Chicago, because in order to get in the business, you got to be in Los Angeles or New York. And everyone in Chicago thinks that, all right, I'll just keep living here doing my thing. I'll get discovered. It's a lot harder out here than it is out there.
Right.
And
right.
I mean, that,
keep in mind two things at the risk of interrupting you. The rules are less and less, right? The hard and fast rules that were hard and fast for so long. Are not so hard nor so fast anymore.
Absolutely.
LA and New York, you know, the boundaries, the geographical boundaries of those two cities sort of end in the middle of the country at this point. I mean, the TV business, the film business, a lot of it can be done in, I mean, certainly there's a nucleus in LA and New York, but a lot of it can be done in your basement in Oklahoma, you know. And there are a handful of those discovered overnight stories that make for good stories that are passed on that inspire other people to be that one that's going to be the one discovered overnight. So it's not that it never happens, but it is, it's deceptively small that it does happen. But,
right,
you know, you turn around and somebody puts together a flip camera movie or a flip camera commercial for the Super Bowl. Next thing you know, they have an agent and a deal. So there are enough of those ways for that to happen. But it does require, on most people's parts, time and patience and luck and being in the right place at the right time. And as the then president told me at CBS back in the day, he said it's a matter of time and timing, and you're waiting for both in your case.
Now, I don't want to be too inside baseball here, but what are some of your favorite experiences from working at CBS? I mean, I did want to touch upon that you played a role in a lot of their in their turnaround, because they were having a rough time in the late
right.
90s from being known as like the old people's network. And you had a good part in turning that around with yourself. And I know you could talk about some other people you worked with there as well. So what are some of your experiences from working there that you're really proud of?
Well, by the time I got there in 93, and by 95, for whatever reason, be it cyclical or product or people, CBS was in dire straits. I mean, we all but were in fourth place out of four networks, or the joke was fourth place out of three networks. CBS was in bad straits in 1995, and there was an attempt to turn it around literally overnight, which, of course, you can't do. And that made things even worse. But that was also the year that coming in to head up CBS was Leslie Moonves. And all paths that are successful at CBS lead to Leslie's door. And I'm not just saying that. There's nothing in it for me to say right now. I'm not working at CBS at the time. But it's the truth. And Leslie, in hiring Kelly Call to head up scheduling, put together a team in our department, scheduling, and elsewhere in the building over the course of his first 18 months that helped build, that created the turnaround in a much more organic way rather than what was tried in 95, which was a desperate, let's change everything overnight. Because in 1995, CBS introduced 11 new series, and it is a little inside baseball to say that, but that's like changing your entire starting lineup.
Right.
So nobody... every one of those shows was canceled except for one. And you know, it sort of lost its existing constituency that was watching, and you can't necessarily, especially in those days, recruit a brand-new audience from scratch just because you have on shows that you think appeals to younger people. So that was a disastrous year. But from 95 to 2000 was building years, and Leslie has... you know, many a reputation that precedes him, and I won't say he's the most patient man in the world. He loves success. He likes, you know, things to work right away. We all do.
But he was really successful at Warner Brothers beforehand, correct?
He was. He came out of Warner Brothers being the number one television supplier in television business, and certainly not just that, but they were on fire at the time with ER and with Friends. So if you're going to be at the hottest studio or the most prolific studio in town, it also helps that that's the hottest one in town, because you didn't get any hotter than Warner Brothers in 1994-95 when Leslie came out of Warner Brothers. But it was a slow build. There were many high profile failures, but from 95 to 99, the seeds were planted. We knew that it would take some time to sort of slowly turn the boat around, to tell people that it's not just us telling you we're a new CBS, we have the product to back it up. And there's some luck in that as well, because we got Ray Romano on Everybody Loves Raymond, and that was the beginning of a new comedy build in 1996. And then things started to turn around in the year 2000 with Survivor and then with CSI. So when you have that, when you have the juggernauts, you can rebuild the lineup, and that's what happened. But it was nice to be a part of it, but it wasn't me doing it.
But how did you help, now not just yourself, but as a network, how did you turn those shows into juggernauts? What was the secret in the sauce?
Well, a lot of it, much like people trying to break into the business, or for that matter, any success, whether it's in Washington or in your own family, a lot of it was just we were glad that shit happened, because Raymond started out on a Friday night, and it was in the cellar. Raymond was, I mean, it's the same show, same creators, same funny, same actors, same writing, but it was on the wrong night, or it was on a night that it couldn't flourish. Right. And then in moving it to Monday night, not only did it flourish, but Monday flourished. And then out of that, you have a new king of Monday night, which is Raymond, ultimately at 9 o'clock on Monday night, which is what we would call the tent pole holding up the night. And then all good shows, which there was existing shows around them anyway, they were good. But eventually the whole night became a brilliant must-see television on CBS.
Well, you be honest, Jim. You could be honest. This is a no one's listening. Don't worry. you secretly created Yes, Dear, didn't you?
You know what? I'll tell this to Alan Kirshenbaum because he's a friend of mine. He was one of the two showrunners of Yes, Dear. I didn't see it. I saw the pilot. I didn't see the run of that show. Mainly, though, because a lot of times when you're testing a brand new show, like any new product, there can be a false positive. And something that makes everybody love it, you know, whatever it is, sort of artificially. And then you say to yourself, all right, well, if that's taken out of it, is there any there? And to be honest, and I think I've told Alan this, I'm not sure, I didn't see that with the pilot of Yes, Dear. And frankly, I think I was alone in the room. I mean, I was with many people in the room, but I was the only one who didn't see it. So I fess up to that. But in the pilot to Yes, Dear, there was an hysterical, well, but everybody thought was an hysterical sight gag about a young toddler, two and a half years old, one of the kids in the show, walking on water. And it was all done through special effects, obviously. And it's a complicated story. But it ended up being nothing but a sight gag. And the then head of drama development was in the screening because the comedy developers don't go to the comedy screenings when you screen pilots, and the drama don't go to the drama ones, if you're following.
Yeah.
So the head of drama development, who's got an infectious, not just an infectious laugh, it's an aggressive laugh, and she's good with sort of farcical, easy jokes. She carried the room because she practically peed herself falling into the aisle laughing at that sight gag, and it does go on for a while. So in the room and amongst regular viewers in testing groups, the dials went off the charts because of that scene, and then the show, to make a long story short, gets on the air.
Well, that's what you told me.
I didn't see it.
Jim, you told me once you put babies in your pilot, and the dialing, the numbers go off the charts in the testing room.
You put babies, people surviving really incredibly complicated surgeries. You put pets in there, and you put music that is not cleared, you know, because it's expensive to put
right.
Pop music in a show. So if it's, quote-unquote, just for the pilot, that's only going to be seen in a room, there's all kinds of tricks that are used, and probably many more so since I've been out of the room. But music and babies are one of them. The pilot for Chicago Hope in 1994, the pilot for Chicago Hope, featured the separation of conjoined twins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was delicate all throughout, and then
that's
will they or won't they, and through the roof.
Yeah, no, the end of what you were telling me, the show was going all right. It was going well. And then the last scene of the show is, and of course, the baby's got to live. They're separating these conjoined twins, and the testing went through the roof.
Right.
They're you got to love that.
Yeah, Mandy Patinkin saves twins, and it goes through the roof.
Right, we didn't have to spring for those Earth, Wind, and Fire songs.
Exactly. We always bet on which is the one song, or when we were in the room, and I haven't been in that particular room since 2006. We always bet for which of the current crop of pop songs is going to be the one that every producer uses, you know, to make a pop relatable TV impression. And one year it was Sugar Ray. Every morning, is that what it's called?
Yeah. So was that in like every pilot?
Every pilot, exactly right. Every pilot used Sugar Ray that one year, and it was really became funny after a while because you watch 20 pilots, and it's like, God, you know, can't you come up with anything different?
So people were just like, boy, now that was a really good Sugar Ray usage, a lot better than the last.
Yeah, were they comparing the usages? Were
Look, the bass,
much better.
The bass on that usage was much better than the bass on the previous usage.
Yes.
Now,
it's a fascinating process, but anyway, I feel like I'm over talking. You can ask questions.
I was going to have you tell a story that's totally unrelated to you, but I was telling a story at my barbecue on the 4th that you told me, but you do it so much better. It's not related to you, but it's do the opening scene from NYPD Blue for me, could you?
The opening scene? Oh, that one. Awesome. In 93, of course, Stephen Bochco, he started talking about this in 1991. He said everybody is flocking to cable, and it's because of the R-rated programming on cable, so we need R-rated programming on network television in order to compete. I found that to be untrue, and I still do. I think, you know, Game of Thrones and HBO may be full of I have my family listening to this, so it may be full of nudity, but there's also a show there. Right?
Oh, you have your family listening. I don't know if you should do the NYPD Blue bit now.
Well,
I'm like,
I can do that one because it's in Latin.
The beginning of the show, they're probably not listening anymore now.
It is in Latin, except right. The last line from Franz.
That's true. Where Stephen Bochco announced himself, smart guy that he is, where he announced himself as sort of the BC and AD of R-rated television or primetime television sort of becoming much more adult. It ended up happening 2 years after his declaration that I'm going to get R-rated programming on television with the pilot of NYPD Blue. That begins, if I remember correctly, and this is 1993, it begins with Sylvia Costas, who would then be later become his girlfriend. But Sharon Lawrence, Sharon Lawrence in court, maybe it was arraignment, but whatever. There was a court proceeding involving, I believe, a perp that Dennis Franz's character, Andy Sipowicz, was behind or responsible for, but the perp ended up not being charged or getting off or being acquitted or whatever. There wasn't enough evidence, or whatever evidence there was tainted. So Sipowicz meets her afterwards right after. This is a cold open, brand new show. First couple of minutes of a brand new show, 10 o'clock on a Tuesday night. He confronts her outside on the courthouse steps, enraged that this caller was released. And she says to him, apparently the rules of evidence or whatever the rule was a Latin rule, and it was res ipso locutor. Now, I took Latin for 4 years. I don't know what that means. But I gather the point was the evidence wasn't there or it was tainted or whatever. But she says, res ipso locutor, Detective Sipowicz. At which point Dennis Franz, you know, who probably would admit that he's not the most handsome man in the world, grabs his crotch, looks at her, and he says, ipso facto this, you pissy little bitch.
And then roll credits.
Right.
Opening roll credits.
Oh, that show was great, though.
However, what was brilliant about NYPD Blue, and it was a brilliant show, is, sure, I mean, there was a bare ass there in every episode of either gender, but it achieved its excellence still with humanity and storytelling and good cop stories.
Yes,
and
it did.
Ultimately, which had nothing to do with the package, no pun intended, that he tried to wrap it in, which is R-rated programming.
Right.
Ultimately, it achieved its magnificence in a scene that had nothing to do with R-rating and everything to do with humanity, such as when Jimmy Smith's character died in front of his wife, played by, who was it? I forget.
Oh, I forget who plays his wife.
She's on Army Wives now.
Army Wives. I know who you're talking about. Oh.
The curly-haired woman.
Amy
very nice woman. The one who isn't Amy. We called her the one who isn't Amy Brenneman.
The one who...
something Delaney. Kim Delaney.
Oh, Dana
Kim
Delaney.
Delaney. Kim Delaney.
Oh, Kim Delaney.
Yeah, not Dana. Dana's on body of proof.
Oh.
Anybody who wants to see how good television can be, even in what was then its 110th year, it had been on forever, can go back and look at the episode where Jimmy Smits dies, and most of it takes place in his head as he meets what we assume is God or his afterlife, and then ultimately has to slip out of the hand of his wife in the hospital room, played by Kim Delaney. That's brilliant television. It's in every sense.
We call her over here the other Delaney. So,
right.
The one that's not Amy Brenneman and the other Delaney. Yeah.
The one that's exactly.
Now, someone sending in emails for you, Jim. I got a couple questions for you. I don't know if you want questions from the listeners.
I'll answer them, but don't forget to ask me about how shows are canceled. That's the cue. And
I
then Suzanne Plichette.
Well,
I figured I could talk about Suzanne Plichette because she's passed away.
Yes. Well, all right, I'll ask you, how shows are canceled? Wait, I have to write this down because it's good. everyone steals my pens around here. Okay, but our question from our listener is, our one listener,
yes.
Did Jim have anything to do with the decision for CBS to pick up JAG after NBC dumped it? If so, he's a genius. And he means that.
I appreciate that. I was in the room, and I supported it, even though my contention is usually that shows that jump networks don't usually last, and that certainly belied that theory because it lasted forever. But I was in the room when it was discussed, and it was, I think, brought from Paramount to Leslie and then his number two at the time, Billy Campbell. So I remember being in the room when Billy comes in with what was then the latest phone call from Paramount about the possibility of picking up JAG. But that did very well for CBS, and I don't mind taking credit for it because I don't think Leslie or Kelly is listening, or Billy for that matter.
That's not Billy Campbell, the actor, by the way.
No.
Who, by the way, is
no,
brilliant.
We call him the other Billy Campbell.
The other Billy Campbell.
Yeah, right.
Although the other Billy Campbell is now more famous than the famous Billy Campbell because our Billy Campbell from CBS, who later went to Discovery, and I worked with him there as well, he was on the Sully Sullenberger plane that went down in the Hudson 2 years ago.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Let's call him still a different Billy Campbell entirely.
He was on the Sully plane, huh?
He was on the Sully plane that went down in the Hudson.
Show. I need to get Sully on the show. I hear he's a media guy now. I think Sully.
Might have to pay him.
I think he had a pilot, Sully.
You might have to pay him even more than you're paying me.
Oh, gosh.
So anything.
Yeah, anything. So, Jim, where do you see television going, especially in networks and especially with sitcoms? Because we're doing the one camera right now. Do
right.
you believe in it being cyclical and coming back to multicam? Are we going to go back to, like, CBS has still kind of not gone to the one camera sitcom. They have the laugh tracks or the live audience, and they have the multicam.
Right.
Is that all going to come back, you think? Do you think single camera may actually even be hurting television? What are your views on that?
Did you two ever watch Good Morning America with David Hartman? Because he used to ask questions that were single questions and yet 13 inside that one question. Just
That's
like you
all
did.
I do. That, yeah. And sometimes I answer my own questions and don't let the guest answer.
You know what? You know what? You can answer whichever of those questions in that huge question you want.
Yeah, just pick
you
one.
Just
pick one, and then if it's wrong, I'll tell you.
I will tell you, actually, CBS has experimented with it in the past. They didn't do too well, although today that lack of success would probably be called that failure would probably be called a success because the
right.
whole definition of what works has changed. How I Met Your Mother is not done in front of an audience. So that's sort of a hybrid show that has worked, and I have a loose definition of working for that show. That show has worked without the standard multicam, but for the most part.
Do they have
CBS
a laugh track on How I Met Your Mother? Because I don't watch it.
I think all shows are sweetened, and I don't know this to be the truth, but I would imagine that's the kind of show that's played to live audience response.
Gotcha. Okay, but
I don't think it's pure laugh track. When and if you talk to my former boss Kelly, you can ask him; he may know. Do I think it's cyclical? All right, where's television going? It's really not going anywhere. In two ways. You know, if you reread Armageddon apocalyptic type books like the early 90s, Three Blind Mice, or that was actually the late 80s, or anything from the late 80s to the early 90s that predicted the future of television that said network television would probably not be around in the year 2000 or 2010, you can, you know, that's what I think about predictions. But I don't think network television is going anywhere. Within that is also there's many different definitions of network television these days. You know, Fox is still not a full-fledged network. CW will say to itself, we're a library first and a network second, because they make their money from producing the shows, not necessarily from airing the shows, producing and selling the shows, not necessarily from airing the shows. The audience for that network is not that huge.
No.
They have popular shows, but again, it's popular within their own particular target audience.
Right.
So I don't think television necessarily is going anywhere. And as we've talked about in class, you know, in a broad sense, if you're like in the world of, and I hate this word, it's my least favorite word about the whole transition we're in, but if you're in the world of content production, which is anything involving making or selling a story with words and images from a grip to a writer to a producer, that ain't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Because there's an infinite amount of airspace that needs to be filled up with images and words. So the actual what we watch or the things we watch aren't going anywhere. The problem, of course, in the future is how to monetize it, my second least favorite word, you know, how to make a living at it, what the business model is as the business model changes. But TV isn't necessarily going anywhere. It is evolving into what was described 2 weeks ago in Chicago at your cable television association conference, whatever the name of that association was.
Right.
One of the people who spoke there said, ultimately, there's no such thing as television anymore. All there is a remote viewing device.
Huh.
Now, are we heading in that direction? Yes. It's a tiny, tiny bit cynical. It's understandable why he says that, especially a guy at cable saying that over a guy who's at network. But we're in that direction. It's not going to happen tomorrow, in my opinion. Comedy, I think, has been in bad shape for a long, long time. I think we could have a whole separate – we could do a whole class at DePaul about why that's the case.
Yeah.
Pardon?
No, I agree.
I agree.
It's just in bad shape for many, many, many different reasons. I myself have a bias against single-camera comedy, but not because they're bad or because they're the end of comedy as we know them. I think a lot of single-camera comedies, they're very impressed with themselves, and so they assume that the audience will be impressed by them as well, and that's not the case. And often I find single-camera comedies, with the rare exception of a show like MASH or whatever, but a lot of them is the sound of one hand clapping. There's so much to me that is about the live viewer response to anything. Even if you're in a movie screening, there's still an audience participating in the experience. That's not necessarily the case with single camera comedy. And it's not comedy to me that necessarily involves brilliant writing and character development and storytelling. It can be hysterical in a 30 Rock Modern Family way. Modern Family is probably the closest we've come to a hit in a long, long time that's right. A single camera show. But a lot of the comedy comes from it's helped out by the editing.
Now,
the sound effect.
Now what would you
say? In the middle, you know, Arrested Development with the sounds they make when people do a quick turn to the left or right and you hear the whoosh, you know, or the winking at the camera kind of stuff, all that stuff that is a supplement and funny, but a supplement to the comedy that everybody on the live, you know, the 3-camera, 4-camera stage is trying so hard to get those same number of laughs, but they're getting it from performance and from words.
No, I agree. And no, I totally agree. And I think, I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I think part of the reason, this is kind of off topic, but you brought up 30 Rock. And yeah. I think that show just had it hard out of the gate because I don't think you could make a super successful hit about working in the entertainment business.
There never has been one.
No, and I don't think there ever will be.
There was the Dick Van Dyke Show, but it was as much Carl Reiner's interpretation of his life at home and at work.
Right.
But for the most part, every show from Action to Teddy Z to dramas that nobody remembers anymore, like Bracken's World from the 1960s, it's very inside baseball.
I
and
think
not
the
a
only,
whole lot of success.
The well, only hit I could ever remember that was about the entertainment business, a hit, was Get Shorty. That's all I could remember off the top of my head.
The player.
In feature film world, yeah.
I'm talking like money.
By the way, we can also turn to Gary Shandling and Larry Sanders and all that. Totally different because...
I think Larry Sanders in a way... But I don't know if I totally think Larry Sanders was about just the TV business. And it probably had the right medium, too, being on HBO. And it was so different at the time, too. I think that really helped the show. But Larry Sanders was a genius show. That'll probably be the closest thing to being a really good show about being on TV.
Well,
but it never mattered whether people were watching it because it was on HBO.
Right.
But with respect to comedy, what would you say to people like me who might believe perhaps – when you watch something, I don't need to be in a room full of people, I believe, who are laughing to know that something is funny. You know what I mean? That doesn't
count. No, When I talk about this in class, and people are probably more close to your age than mine, certainly, I'm in the minority, and we are talking about a different. We are talking about a whole evolution of the way you watch comedy. So I'm aware of that.
And
that's
I'm
very careful about how I say it, and I say it's a personal bias, but I don't mean you need it to know that it's funny, but I'm saying it's part of the experience.
Right, and I agree.
People aren't having that experience anymore.
Right, and I've studied film and film watching extensively, fairly extensively myself, and the added experience of watching it in a theater adds a whole other dimension to it.
Right.
I was going to build on what you're saying, Lee, is I kind of have the same kind of background as you, and Jim and I have talked about this. 2 years ago, I decided all the comedy on TV, I hated it. So I got together with my buddy Steve Weirich, and him and I wrote the first draft of a pilot that ended up taking a bunch of drafts to write. But we kind of wanted to bring back like the old school kind of like sitcom. And, right. I would hate to see it be single cam because I feel like it's a tribute show
right.
to classic sitcoms. And I'm hoping that writing a show like that, I hope there's other people writing shows like that as well out there, even though it's probably bad for me. But it's good
right.
because there needs to be comedy on TV now. I just don't think – I think they're trying too hard to be something they're not anymore. Or they're trying to – there's not enough young people in the business. I have this problem.
But see, I like to
yeah.
see that kind of stuff evolve. I like to see television evolve and change and be different.
No, I agree with you. That's great to watch. But I think a big problem is sometimes – I think – some older people at the networks are kind of out of step with how to, one, market, and two, how to build a show for a younger audience. And I think that's part of the reason. I don't think it's just Hulu and Netflix and all that. I think part of it is NBC, in my opinion, does a horrible job marketing their shows. Horrible.
Right.
Awful. And also, I don't think NBC's shows are universal to an audience. I don't think they're I don't think they're audience friendly enough. I think they're too like tongue in cheek. You have to have
a certain humor to get it. They don't necessarily need the audience to watch them in order to be good. I'm like, well, if you don't need me to watch it, then I'm not going to watch it. Look, I think we're talking about a lot of very salient important points that are and theories that can be shared, and they're all, you know, cross current from one another. But the bottom line is, other than Modern Family, who's sitting in front of their television these days, falling on the floor laughing at comedy in a time when people used to do that?
Right. No, I agree. I agree.
And I would say that to Lee as well. I mean, look, I'm not challenging anybody. I understand. I mean, it takes whatever classes I try to teach, I probably walk away with it as much as like I hope the students do, because I'm learning what a 21-year-old likes, and I'm into the evolution thing and all that, and
right.
this is what I want. You know, I get all that, and they're watching it in the sanctity of their own computer.
Well, I'm very like Matt. I literally sit at the TV and watch the show when it's on the station.
Right.
Well, that and yeah, I mean, that's what I love as well. But how many of us really, you know, I won't use the phrase running home and mean it, but how many of us are running home because there's such great comedy that we can't wait to sit down and laugh our ass off way we did with, let's just pick one that won't offend anybody and go for Cheers or Seinfeld.
Seinfeld, yes, Seinfeld. You're absolutely right. I was only like 13, 14. I had to make sure I was home from my friend's house to watch Seinfeld at night, even then. Super young then. I had to watch it.
But beyond even the appointment part of it, because then younger people would say nobody runs home anymore. I'm not trying to attach myself to that so much as, you know, none of us are really, even in our mind, running home in our minds to catch the latest comedy that we know we can't miss because everybody's going to be talking about it. And for that matter, that's funny. How many of us are really laughing that much beyond Modern Family, which I think gets a lot of its laughs, both, you know, the easy way and the hard way. All of this, by the way, is by way of saying, you know, Hot in Cleveland has established that there's still an audience for multicams, albeit that's an older audience. Big Bang Theory, Charlie Sheen, or Two and a Half Men, still work. No, I have no thoughts to offer on Charlie Sheen. But Two and a Half Men, you know, still work in terms of a multicam, which is, you know, I don't know if we're being too inside baseball, but shows that are done in front of an audience where you can hear the audience laugh. So the hits will mean other people will try. You know, where there is a hit, there is somebody who say, I can do that too. Why you're seeing so much of it on ABC and NBC is because they have one or two hits, but you're not going to put a live-action show or a multi-cam show in the same time period following
right.
a single-camera show. So they're sort of developing for their hits.
Well, I hear they're actually doing that at NBC this year, though. I heard that Whitney show's multi-cam and
right.
it's going to be up for The Office.
It is.
It's going to be a debate.
But they I think they're going to try it. I think they're going to have some issues with it.
Yeah, let me just go out and say my prediction is disaster. I probably shouldn't say that. It's not very political of me, but disaster.
Are we talking about your social life again?
Yeah, pretty much just like my life, disaster. Now, it's funny that you brought up Kelly Call, though. We're hoping to have him on next month. He'll promote the new
yes.
television season at CBS. So I'm looking forward to that. So I just wanted our
yes.
listeners to know we're trying to get Kelly on. We've talked to him. We're hoping to get him on. How are shows canceled, Jim, since you wanted to talk about that?
Yes.
My favorite example, two examples. One, I thought I could say this because she's passed away, Suzanne Pleshette. I don't want to talk too much about people that are alive. But Suzanne Pleshette, who was in the Bob Newhart show, among other things, and a movie actress, was in a really, really, really bad comedy for CBS in 1993 or 94 with Hal Linden. And go form your own humor there. but it was called The Boys Are Back. And ultimately, I think it was 94. And ultimately, as the story goes, she called the then president. I wasn't there for the call. She called the then president of CBS, not Leslie Moonves at the time. She called him and said, get this piece of shit off the air.
This was
the star of the show.
Well, it reminds me of that Barbara Streisand story you told, too, about her movie playing on the network.
She was offended, according to the story, she was offended, allegedly offended, that we were airing, I think The Mirror Has Two Faces, and forgive me, I'm not Jewish, but I believe it was on... What would be the holiday?
Seder?
Passover?
Holiday in March or April.
Passover.
Yeah.
Passover.
Yeah.
I'm Greek, by the way, just because I knew the answer to that.
And I knew it was Seder, which makes me extra Jew.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jim.
And I think it was, you know, the night of the Seder or whatever. But with all due respect to my Jewish brethren.
Yes.
But the story is... that she found out that her movie was to be shown on that Tuesday and registered objection. She didn't like the airing or the air date we gave the movie because none of her people would be able to see it.
And she allegedly called, like, the guy running the movie, like, in the room?
Well, there's two ways that story can go. One is when she found out the air date ahead of time, she registered her disapproval with somebody she knew at a high-ranking position at the network, tracked him or her down wherever he or she was at the time, and it was not in the office, and registered objection. But this person, being very brilliant, said, Barbara, who are you kidding? By the time the movie comes on, Seder will be over. All your people will be gathering around the set watching your movie.
It's not like they were screening Yentl.
And it's not like, with all due respect to Barbara, the movie was a hit.
Yeah,
I tried to watch it 3 times. I fell asleep
right.
all three.
But when it did ultimately air, the other story is she called Master Control and had them turn down the volume on the commercials.
Yeah.
She doesn't have a remote control in the McMansion that she lives in.
Right.
She needs to call.
And yet.
Really does.
They love Jeff Bridges and Pierce Brosnan. They're in that movie.
Yeah. No, there's great people in that movie. Lauren Bacall.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched it 3 times.
Brenda Vaccaro.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough. I couldn't do it. I liked Prince of Tides, and I'm not afraid to say it.
Prince of Tides. Look, I'm not a big fan of Mirror Has Two Faces, but I think it was well directed. I think she's a good director.
Yeah, she's a perfectionist. So her
people can look. If you hate Barbara Streisand, just put on Yentl, turn the sound down, and watch the way she composed that movie. That was
I
really well done movie.
I don't hate Barbara because we're talking to get James Brolin on. So we love Barbara. We love you, Barbara.
Well, look, like I said, even if you're not into music or the story of Yentl, turn the sound down and watch for 2.5 hours to see the way she composed each one of those shots. That's a brilliantly done movie.
Yeah.
And she applied those talents to Mira Has Two Faces and to Prince of Tides as well, but the material was not as, what's the word? You know, it's not as rich. It's not a, there wasn't a tapestry that she could showcase.
Well,
with,
I just
with
blame Yentl. I just blame Yentl for building the monster that is Mandy Patinkin.
Well, that one I can't talk about on the air.
No. That's fine.
Oh, I love hearing that on this show from guests.
Yeah, you love the Patinkin humor.
No, I love. I can't.
Oh, we get,
get
that ever
that.
So often.
Yeah, no.
We've got.
Yeah, I don't mean to tease you about that. I'll talk to you about it in person or over the phone when I'm not on the air. That's not fair. But yeah, there's a couple of good ones about poor Mandy, but it sounds like all you have to do is subscribe to the New York Times and you have a Mandy Patinkin story.
Now, wait, Jim, but were you – now, not to get too into the Mandy thing, but were you at CBS when he quit Criminal Minds?
Let's see. It was in its fifth – I was at the –
because he
it
quit
was a year before.
Years, I want to say.
I was at the studio for 2 years and the network for 13 years, and it was between those two gigs.
Oh, okay, because –
But yes, I know all of, I know what went on. Yes.
Yeah, I hear the cast isn't too happy with Mandy, is what I heard.
Well, I don't think
the guide that was real detailed about it.
Oh, Mandy.
Yeah, Bruce Frech.
Yeah,
to get
look, it's all been put on the public record. But I think at the very least, Mandy is a specific person and an interesting personality and a trained actor in a certain way that just didn't jive with that show.
Sure.
Or with the other people on it. But that, again, you know, anybody living anywhere who reads TV Guide can probably pick up that information.
Right.
I will tell you, I forget what the show was, but an early lesson in how a show was canceled, hearing in the hallway somebody who had the power to execute said, what were the numbers for that show? I hope they were lousy because nothing would give me more pleasure than to cancel that piece of shit.
And did they read him the numbers? And he goes, done.
It ultimately was canceled. But my all-time favorite was, and we go back to 93 again, but it's not as if it was the Stone Age. Do we have time to tell you this one?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't want to overstay my welcome here.
No, you're not.
In 93, for some reason, somebody said, you know what, there's not enough TV shows on the air with former members of the Eagles. So Glenn Frey got his own private eye show on CBS.
A private eye show?
Yes. Because in 93, people were saying, you know what? There hasn't been enough private eye shows on television. Are there any rock stars that want to play the lead role?
Was Michael Mann involved in that at all?
Yeah,
I know
really.
He's a big Glenn Frey guy.
Right.
No, we should hope. But no. It was called South of Sunset. He was a detective whose office was in L.A., but south of Sunset. Therefore, he had a nice address, even though he had a pretty skanky clientele.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to get too inside, but let's say that it was heavily, heavily promoted in the World Series that year because, you know, you think you have a male audience for Glenn Frey, who even in 93 people were saying, who's that? And by the way, I love him and his music, but it's not as if he's a commanding acting presence. But the show was promoted, the hell out of the show was promoted in the World Series, which I think went 6 games in 93. And there was a lot of money behind it in terms of promotion. And it aired its first episode on a Wednesday, I think October 27th, 1993. The following morning, we have our weekly, what's called current programming meeting. Matt, why don't you tell them what current programming is?
Current programming is when you guys talk about the programming that's on the air. Right, prime
currently
time.
On the air.
Yeah,
allegedly.
Exactly. Currently on the air, as opposed to the shows that are being developed.
Right.
That was one of the things we talked about in my very tough class, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, we'll
get to that. But go ahead.
I got a question about that.
Yeah, I
got
to know about Glenn Frey though first.
Thursday morning, we sit down. The overnight ratings are passed around the table. The numbers in the toilet for South of Sunset, which is not the least bit surprising.
My sound engineer just said, what a shock.
And yet there's still, with all due respect to my former colleagues and other people at other networks, there's still always this disconnect that says, but we promoted it, but it got heavy rotation in the World Series, but we have all this money behind it in marketing. And every year, I want to see anybody with a lot of people want to say, that doesn't mean people care.
You're right.
Ultimately, no one watched. So we're all sitting around the table waiting for the 9 o'clock meeting to begin, passing around our we all have a copy of the overnight ratings. It's dismal. The number is obvious that no one cares about this show. The then president of CBS comes in. He's in charge of the meeting. Great guy. He had a third president, the first one I worked for in 93. And, he's a smart, terrific, impressive guy, but he doesn't intimidate. So it's not as if everybody shut up when he walked in. But this morning, everybody shut up when he walked in because the numbers for that show were so bad. Anyway, I'm making this not to be more than – I mean, the show lasted longer – or this story is lasting longer than the show.
That sounds like it was like a funeral, pretty much.
He sat down. Somebody passed him a copy of the overnights, which they would anyway for whatever reason. You know, what are the ratings last night? It's typical. It's a TV meeting. Before it begins, he looks at the numbers. And I wish we were on camera because so much of it involved sort of a double take or the way he was looking. Because he looked down at the camera, he looked down at the numbers. Looked up again, looked down again at the numbers, looked up, and found the head of current programming, or the woman in charge of people who will help serve as the current executives for CBS. But she being the head of current programming, knew everything about every show. That's her job. So anyway, he looks at the numbers, looks up, looks down at the numbers again, looks up and looks at her, and he says, "Are they still shooting this show?" And she said, "Yeah, it's a brand new show. It's only October. They started in July. We're only got probably 9 or 10 episodes in." You know, she starts answering it specifically and barely gets to the end of her sentence when the president stops her and says, "Tell them to stop." And that's how South of Sunset was canceled.
Oh, I
need on the overnight ratings. Another episode never aired.
I need to find episodes of this show now.
Yeah.
Now you sold it better than CBS did.
James. Right.
Because now
are they still shooting the show? Tell them to stop.
Yeah.
Tell them to stop. Man, I wish. See, this is why I'm kind of torn. I'm like, part of me wants to write and act and do all this comedy stuff, and then part of me wants to become some kind of executive at a CBS because this shit's funny to me.
You'd make a good one.
Well, this shit.
That involves everything, then, Matt. That's acting. That's comedy. That's everything.
Perfect. Perfect for it. And I golf.
Jim,
not well.
Jim,
not
let
well.
Me ask you about this class.
Yes, sir.
Now, tell me a little bit about it and the class that Matt's taken with you, if you'd be.
Lee
so
wants the dirt. In other words, he doesn't believe my story.
And what kind of work is Matt doing in that class?
Are we using the word work in air quotes?
Of course.
Allegedly.
When I was at the most recent gig at CBS, I was on the studio side, which, you know, makes the shows as opposed to the network that airs the shows.
Mm-hmm.
And in that capacity, I optioned a script, a comedy that was really well written, tried to sell it. But, we optioned it at the studio, tried to sell it. And ultimately, we couldn't sell it. But we liked the writer. Turns out the writer is a faculty member at DePaul University in Chicago. So I got to know him throughout this development process. He says, "Jim, would you ever want to come and talk to the school?" And I'd not heard that much about DePaul, and I didn't know where it was. And, you know, I like talking about myself. I've learned how anyway.
Uh-huh.
And so the answer was yes. And I went there in October of 2009 and had a really good session in front of, you know, whoever was in the hall that night or the auditorium that night. And by the way, the name of the writer of the script and the guy who recruited me there is Dan Klein. He's a good writer and a good teacher and a nice guy. And he interviewed me in front of the school, at which point somebody said, "That was fun. And, you know, your stories are interesting or whatever. Would you ever want to teach here?" And I said, when I have a free, 10, 11 weeks to make up a quarter at DePaul, which is on the quarter system, sure. I said, "I've never taught before," and, you know, that turns out that doesn't matter. It's based on life experience. And I'm like, no, I can understand that part. I mean, literally, how do you stand in front of a room for 3 hours?
Right.
So that part was you learn on the job. But I did that for the first time last fall, and I came back in the spring. And one of the classes I had, they let me create the curriculum. They asked me to create it, you know, sort of history of TV and just sort of behind the scenes, how it works. you know, anything you want to know about television, but we're afraid to ask or whatever. And in my one of my spring classes this year was Matt.
There you go.
Who,
and there's Maud.
And there's Maud.
And then there's Maud.
Yeah.
Yeah, Matt. Well, Matt's an interesting guy now, isn't he? That does that says everything.
Right.
All right. Do we have to be honest? The day I met Jim. Oh, this story's so fucking embarrassing. Oh, effing embarrassing. Jim has family listening. This story's embarrassing. So I'm sitting in class.
You don't have to tell this story, by the way.
No, it's funny.
He knows the one.
Right.
He knows. This is how I met Jim, okay? I'm sitting in class, and I'm sitting there, and I'm looking around at all the other students who are terrific, great, whatever. And I'm like, I don't belong in here. I'm 27. These kids are all like 19. I'm like looking around. I'm like, you know, I'm going to be talking about stuff that they've never even heard about. I'm going to look like a loser. I'm going to look like a bum. So I go into Jim's office after class. I go, Jim, can we talk? He goes, yeah, sure. So I go into his office, and basically it created my interview style where I rambled and talked for 30 minutes and let Jim get in like three words. And it was me going, Jim, I don't know if I could do this. And then I'd ask Jim a question and then I'd answer it for him. I'd be like, but here's the thing. It was
What Matt doesn't know is about 20 minutes into this conversation, I left the room and he didn't notice.
Matt
he
was
just kept on talking.
At that sandwich all of a sudden.
Well, no, this is a true quote from, I'll remember this the rest of my life, and I don't think Jim will remember this, but this is how funny Jim is, but I didn't know if it was a joke at the time, and I called up all my friends afterwards going, oh, I totally just blew it with Jim McCarron's. And Lenny can attest to that. And he goes, hey, Matt, have you thought about seeing a therapist? And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's about right. That's about right. That's a good opening. That's good opening.
Was that my direct quote?
It was something along those lines. Or I think you said, have you seen a therapist? Even worse.
I like to remember it in the following prism.
No, please.
Through the following prism. That you were talking about a lot of things that had nothing to do necessarily with learning in my class. It was compelling and it was interesting, but it was about you as a person as opposed to you as a student. I like to think I was saying something along the lines of, that sounds like material that's better suited for a therapist.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
So he started a podcast instead.
Yeah.
Same thing, right?
Right.
Well, I was telling somebody myself about meeting Matt for the first time, and he's telling you the truth, but I will embellish by saying when he was looking around in the class for those 3 hours, mind you, and thinking he doesn't belong there, whatever his thinking was, I didn't know it at the time. All I saw was a guy sort of sitting halfway into his chair, rolling his eyes for 3.5 hours.
Oh, no.
And oh, man.
It turns out he was rolling his eyes saying, I don't belong here, I'm a loser, or whatever else he just confessed to saying. But from the front of the room, it was, what am I doing with these losers? I'm so much better than this class.
Oh, come on. That's not true at all. And this is the story.
I didn't know you. I was in the front of the room. I'm telling you, you were rolling your eyes at everything everybody said.
Oh, wow. It's like, this is the first time a man's told me that, though. It's usually women in bars that are like, I've been looking at you for like 30 minutes. You're the biggest jack off ever met.
I don't know which side of that story is sadder, the one where you feel inferior or superior to those people.
Yeah, I don't know
Suffice it to say, it's not easy to stand up there for 3.5 hours with a brand new set of eyes staring at you. And this class made it a little tougher than previous classes I had. I think it was the end of the school year, and they kind of had dialed down and disengaged. And it was really hard trying to get them to rock and roll a little bit and laugh at my jokes and participate in the class. Oddly enough, what it took was about 5 weeks in, I don't know if this was Matt's class or my Thursday class, but all of a sudden they found their tongues and they started talking, but it was about pedophilia.
That was our class. We talked about pedophilia for a good 30 minutes. I checked out.
And it was after the session had ended, after the school session or the class session had ended, and I thought, you know what, Guys, I know I'm glad you found your tongue after 5 weeks of being silent in front of me for all this 3.5 hours each week. But why does it have to be after class has, you know, officially ended? And why does it have to be about pedophilia?
Yeah.
But it got if you remember, Matt, it got really, really weird because somebody
it did get weird. Rape came up, pedophilia came up, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to the washroom.
Right.
Well, what was unfortunate about it, by the way, it was actually you don't need to get into it necessarily here, but it was a really on topic, provocative conversation
because
it was launched out of how far will TV go, so it did have a connection to television, but somebody who doesn't necessarily articulate his point of view very well, who was in the class, not Matt, came out according to everybody else who was listening, in his awkward way, he ended up supporting pedophiles, or at least defending them.
Right.
And he didn't mean to. But at that point, it became really, really weird, and I saw the front row in front of me, and the eyes turned, and I thought there was going to be a lynch mob created around this guy, and it got really, really, really weird.
No, I just started ignoring it. I was in no lynch mob. I was just tuning out at that point.
Right.
But you didn't see the people in the front row in front of me who couldn't believe this guy was, defending pedophiles.
I saw them looking at the guy, though, and
yeah.
I'm like, yep, I got to tune out right now. I can't feel
it. It was weird.
Well,
I'm open to tons more questions about behind the scenes. I can shut up if you want. I can tell you about Concert for America for 9/11. We can talk about what happens on 9/11 on a day like that. We can talk about development, either my development or television's development.
But you know what we need? We need to schedule another interview with Jim.
Okay.
Right.
We didn't need to do because we've been doing an hour and 10 minutes. Like, this is going to be like, it just feels like hanging out. You kind of lose time. I know
Lee. Well, I love talking about it, but I also like supporting anybody who wants to know more about it and people who want to get into it as well. Because,
well, according to you, Jim, I already think I know everything about it.
And now, so do our listeners.
That was only your face. That was only your facial expression. Yes, I'm sorry, I interrupted.
What a good actor I am, by the way. Yeah.
There you go.
Perfectly. Yeah, that was me acting. Hey, Vay. I'm learning things today.
Was your colleague there about to ask us a question?
He's always got questions.
I'm your colleague.
You are my colleague.
With respect to discussing issues, I'd read that you're very outspoken on the way women are portrayed on television. And you're very careful about what kind of content, you know, that it's always been sort of a concern for you, and that it's a sort of a bit, if you speak to that.
It was a huge problem I had at CBS. I don't mind saying that, because actually my whatever issue I had sort of was still gurgling in my wake when I left, because I was told that when there was a discussion about female violence, somebody said, oh, it's a Jim McCarron's note, and he's not even here anymore. And they thought they were making fun of me. And, in fact, I said that was the best compliment you could pay me, because I don't need you to remember me, but this is a really important topic that needs to be covered. And it wasn't violence per se. I mean, like, I love shoot 'em ups. I love sex. I love nudity. I love R-rated, X-rated program. It's not about Puritan programming or only programming Little House on the Prairie. The problem, in a nutshell, was – and it was by virtue of the fact that CBS was primarily a crime drama network. So the overwhelming product was about killing. It's not as if CBS went out of its way to create programming about killing, but or women who were killed. But just about every drama was about a crime, and often is the case that the crime is perpetrated against a woman. So, you know, CBS just had too much of it is my problem. But my issue began with an 11-year-old victim on a show called Cold Case, which was run by women, and this episode was written by women. But it was an 11-year-old part of a serial killer's crime spree that was chased around in her underwear until she was exhausted. And like all the other victims of this guy, he would kidnap women at dusk, take them out to a field in the barrens of Pennsylvania, make them run from dusk until dawn. And by dawn, they were so exhausted, they would beg for death or at least for mercy in their underwear. He would then kill them and behead them and bury them. And this episode of Cold Case, I read the script, and this happened in the cold open. So the first couple of minutes of Cold Case, Did it happen off screen? Sure. The death part, it doesn't matter. But the 11-year-old gave up and finally said, begging for her life, said, I want my daddy. And the man killed her. And we aired the episode on Thanksgiving weekend.
Good family program.
And I objected to the content, and I had to explain to more than one person what my objection was. And I'm not saying that in a highfalutin, egomaniacal, Jim can be full of himself way.
Right.
I'm saying I had to explain why there was an issue. Somebody said, I don't understand why you have a problem with this.
Women, I got it. That's what's wild.
Well, I had to explain that it was about an 11-year-old girl. I had to explain that by virtue, nobody's fault, not the producer's fault, that the episode count was such that that particular episode had to air on the weekend it did. But I had a problem with the fact that it was going to end up airing on Thanksgiving weekend. And to extrapolate it from there, that I said this is one more case of a woman being killed because she's a woman as opposed to a guy killed because he's in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that's typically the murders you see on television. And if I'm overstating it or generalizing too much, I'm doing it for a reason. Because in 2 years in a row on Criminal Minds, the pilot, and then the second year premiere,
there's
a woman in a cage. Woman in her underwear in the cage. First year, the pilot, she was in her underwear and chained inside of a cage.
Jim, they had one this year, the season finale. They were all in cages.
Yeah.
Were they women?
Yeah, all women.
By and large, they're in their underwear, or there's a lot of camera time spent reviewing the dead carcass of a woman who usually is scantily clad. By the way, I'm not trying to be Alan Alda about it. I'm not trying to change the world about it. I'm saying, guys, look at the cumulative effect of this.
Right.
And then I started watching all the shows we had. And in three shows, yes, a lot of it is off camera, but it doesn't matter. The content is still what it's about. There were 41 women killed. And there was an episode where a woman was smashed across the face. And that was her kidnapping. That was in the pilot of Criminal Minds. Anyway, there was a lot of, I don't understand why no one has a problem with the cumulative effect of this. I love horror movies, suspense movies, all the
right.
crappy ones even, that are from the point of view of the killer. I'm cool with Friday the 13th. I know that the couple who has sex is going to be the first one to be killed. This is not about changing anything other than, can we reduce the body count? Or at least, can the women be killed because they're in the wrong place at the wrong time, not because of their gender?
Right.
No one understood.
Yeah, nothing.
I was literally sick to my stomach with each one that popped up. There were women in executive roles at CBS, one of whom finally conceded and said, we'll do some testing on these to see what viewers think. And it was a small testing group. And make of it what you will. The only people in the focus groups who had problems with the violence against women were men. The women in the groups did not have a problem.
Hmm. No, that's
whole
that's true.
Topic to be explored there.
Yeah.
No, I mean, look at the Casey Anthony trial. The jurors, they were worried the women would hate her more than the men, or the men would hate her more than the women because of the situation with her being skanky or
right.
whatever.
Or what, yeah.
Because surprisingly...
This came to a head with the Criminal Minds pilot.
Yeah.
This came to a head in New York. The year we picked up the show, and when you go to pick up a show and announce it to the advertisers and to the world in New York in May with your new fall schedule, you always do a cut-down or a promo or a trailer for the new show to showcase it. And the thinking went around New York at the time amongst CBS executives, be careful about the cutdown you make for this pilot because we can't show any of the scenes with her in the cage. And, of course, I was already a year into my so-called crusade at that point. And I said, why would that be? Why can't we show that? And he said, it's a turnoff. It's really unattractive. We can't show that to people. I said, but we can pick it up as a series and show it to America. And I don't mean that in a grandiose way. I never could understand the thinking behind it. I sent out a memo. I mean, this went on for 2 or 3 years. It came to a head in a pilot screening of a show featuring Kelly McGillis as a cop who became a drunken cop who lost her job. And, you know, it's a pilot, so she finds redemption in the pilot and then goes back to work, and it's about her path back to Being a Good Cop would be the series, I suppose. But in it, if you're following, is this going on too long?
No, go ahead.
No.
In the pilot, Kelly McGillis, and it doesn't matter that it's Kelly McGillis, but it's Kelly McGillis. We've got a respected actress here. The show was directed by a man, goes without saying. In it, she has no money for booze. She needs the booze, so she gets in a car with a stranger and offers sex for money so she can buy the booze. This is halfway through when she has her redemption moment and changes her mind, right? It's all part of her so-called journey, my third least favorite word about television.
Oh, journey.
Yes, her journey. Like, we all sit down and watch television saying, what's that show about the journey again?
Yeah.
So she changes her mind just as she's about to do what she's going to do with this guy for sex, for money. And he gets angry and hits her across the face with a tire iron, which we see, at which point he then grabs her head, jams it in his crotch, and then we hear the zipper being unzipped. So the lights come up after that pilot screening, and it was not a good show for other reasons. So the discussion that always follows a pilot screening, the discussion was minimal because it just – everybody knew that it was probably not a good show here, whatever. That this was probably not one of those that was going to be picked up. And I don't mean to be self-aggrandizing here, but I said, and everybody was done. Are we done? Lights on. Let's all leave. And it's moderated by the head of research. And it was all done. And everybody's getting ready to pack up and leave. And I said, I've got to ask, does nobody in this room have a question with the amount of violence perpetrated against that woman in this show? And everybody made fun of me in a way that they thought would offend me when, in fact, they don't know that I grew up with six brothers and sisters and it's really hard to.
Yeah, and that you're clearly not a prude.
Yeah.
And I'm clearly not a prude. I don't think I am. And then comes, well, Jim, you obviously don't understand that's part of her journey. I hope my niece is no longer listening or whoever is under the age of 18, whatever. But I said, no, I got the part of her journey when she agreed to give the guy a blowjob for money. I understood her journey. What I don't understand is why we have to see him hit her across the face with a tire iron, grab her head by the back of her head, jam it into his crotch, and unzip his pants. So thus begins a fight in the screening room, Jim against the room. They couldn't understand it. Even the women. So... I'm like, I'm not apologizing. And we leave, and in the hallway, two women take me aside and whisper to me, thank you for bringing that up. We women need you to defend us. And I was so angry, I won't repeat what I said, but in essence it was, this means nothing to me out here in the hallway. Why weren't you speaking up 5 minutes ago in the room?
Precisely.
So this went on for about 3 years. And I saved all the shows. Just to show people the cumulative effect. And again, primarily women being killed because they're women and men being killed because they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. And certainly if you're a guy that's killed, you're not put in a cage or disrobed. And the answers I got, that was the best part. That's the title for a book if I ever write one. Because I sent out a memo and I said to everybody, who was in a power, except for Leslie. He's got other things on his mind. He's the head of a multi-billion-dollar corporation.
We love Leslie.
He pays people to handle the problems I was trying to get other people to handle. I'm not going to bring him in on it. So I sent out an email, and I said, hey, everybody, to everybody who's in a position of power at CBS. Hey, everybody. Hey, I'm just wondering if anybody has a problem with the amount of black lynchings and gay bashing we're doing in prime time. And then I skipped a line, and then I started a new paragraph. I said, just kidding. We would never show those things, would we? Which begs the question, why are we featuring so many women killed? Because they're women in their bras and panties. And I was made fun of. And the response was, Jim, somebody has to be killed.
Yeah.
That was one of the ten. That was one of the ten that I wrote down.
Not real.
That was a real quote. Someone has to be killed. Second one was, we're only reflecting what's out there.
Oh, man.
Reflecting what's out there. That's my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Because he told this story in class. I remember that. That was my favorite. Reflecting what's out there.
Right.
The third one was, Jim, nobody else is complaining, and the numbers are up.
Oh, yeah. I remember that, too. The numbers are up.
Right.
Yep. That's what they care
about.
The
fourth one was, somebody said, what's the show? What one show? And I said, well, there's an episode of JAG in which some deranged killer is taking women and taking them hostage, sort of burying them underground and putting them in bridal gown and veil. By the way, I have no idea what the show was about. But in his kidnapping, he would dress them as that and chain them underground. And the response was, well, the producer's going through his third divorce.
That happens, I believe, to be the same producer of NCIS now. I believe that. Creator?
Different.
Oh, different? Because that NCIS is a spinoff of JAG, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, I pitched to Leslie Moonves. We wrote Dear Leslie the other day. And I pitched to Les Moonves, Michael Ian Black and Catherine Zeta-Jones starring in NCIS Boise.
Boise, yeah. That was the idea that we came up with on the show.
So we're hoping that's on air next. I haven't heard back from Leslie yet.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Fingers crossed.
I told him I'd meet him at a Chili's, have some fajitas, a couple margs, a couple margaritas. Him and Julie can come.
Margs.
You know what, Matt? I would wait by the phone.
I am waiting by the phone. I'm still waiting to hear back. We had another Dear Leslie where I told them, get off the golf course, Les. Go to Chili's.
Chili's is the new golf.
Chili's is the new golf course. Yeah.
I love that. By the way, I love Chili's. It's my favorite place.
Oh! There we go. See? All right. So
I only want to put a button on the previous story by saying, I swear to you, and I think I've said this more than once, it's not a matter of being holier than thou. It's not a matter of wanting Little House on the Prairie, which somebody else accused me of. She said, you want everything on the air to be Little House on the Prairie.
Right.
Would that she only knew, if she only knew about my private life. But,
well, now that gets me interested.
Yeah, that's another never.
Let me put another story.
I'm only half kidding.
Okay, go ahead.
It was all about, what's the word here? Just perspective or cumulative effect or responsibility.
Well, in a way, too, you're trying to be a responsible businessman, too.
Right. But, yeah, cumulative effect is huge. I mean,
mind you, 6 to 9 months later, there was both Entertainment Weekly and USA Today story about CBS's predilection for killing women in sexual poses.
Yeah.
And I clipped the one from USA Today. Robert Bianco, who everybody makes fun of, but Robert Bianco, well, we'll talk about that off the air, but, you know, he could cause a few eyes to roll at CBS. And he said, hey, what's with CBS's obsession with killing naked women? And I clipped that and sent it to somebody, some D-bag, and at CBS, who's sort of at a lower level, but in the trenches. And I'm sorry, can I say that on the air?
Yo, yes. D-bag, our favorite.
Love that you said that.
You just used our word of the day.
Yeah, right.
Check this out. This guy, by the way, is now running a production company. He has left CBS production company. He found me at the elevator. I was waiting for the elevator, and he said, "Jim, I saw that latest clip you sent us about USA Today making fun of us for killing nude women. Come on, man, get on the team."
Oh,
ooh, one of those guys. He's a bro.
Oh,
he's
Jim.
A bro. Get on the team, man.
Jim, you going to be a team player or not? Come on. Because everyone who works at this network apparently is an angry nerd who didn't get laid enough in high school.
No, that's a frat boy mentality.
Like Jim, like Brian DePaul.
Get on the team, bro.
Brian DePaul.
Mind you, you know, at the time, I think I was 47 years old. He wasn't. I'm not the least bit intimidated or intimidating, and I get... get on the team, he said, you're not still on that, are you? And I said, you mean like, am I still a vegetarian? Yeah, I'm still in favor of not killing women. He said, that doesn't know what he's talking about. Because on our show, our victim was wearing underwear. She wasn't nude.
Oh, and that's a Jim McCarron's note right there. Mm. I love how they made a note out of you. That's how much they were like,
yeah.
Come on, Jim, you're crazy.
Became a Jim McCarron's note. Anyway, I'll stop talking.
A Jim McCarron's note at HBO is probably a good thing. They're like, yeah, more murdering women. Jim hates it. Let's do it.
That's crazy, though. Like, you say one thing, and everyone's like, all right, Gloria Steinem over here doesn't want us to be portraying people in a way. Like, come on.
Can I have a funny aside here to put a button on another topic we talked about? Can I read you the plot to South of Sunset?
Yes.
According to IMDb.com, this is Glenn Frey's hit show. That
Am I right, by the way? October 27th, 1993 is when the one episode aired.
Yes, you were correct, and this is the best log line I've ever read. And you know this only came from some nut job who's never left Beverly Hills. Cody McMahon, a Paramount studio security chief, starts the Beverly Hills Detective Agency.
That's it?
That's the plot. That's the plot. No, there's nothing else. That
pretty
is...
much was the episode.
Yeah. So I'm imagining it's some guy who was like, who's been in L.A. way too long, like Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks does this Larry Crown movie. It's about a midlife crisis. Obviously, right, Tom Hanks doesn't know what a midlife crisis is. He's been in Beverly Hills too long. That's why the movie bombed. It's unrelatable to anybody. And this is like one of those show ideas that someone that's been out in L.A. way too long came up with this unrelatable, okay, he's a security chief at a movie studio.
Right.
And now he's running a detective agency, and we'll pair him up with a black guy, and it'll be 48 hours of television.
Right, we'll put Aziz Ansari in the movie.
Yeah. No, it was Ari Spear.
Ari Spear
was the black hip, he was Eddie Murphy to Glenn Frey's Nick Nolte.
And he ended up going, I think, to Fridays or one of the late night comedy shows. He's a good actor and a funny guy.
Yeah, he went.
He got the good reviews on that that long running series.
Well, the obvious. Oh, I just got an angry. I just got an angry email from someone not to bring up the Tom Hanks bomb, Larry Crown.
Why?
They're very upset. Big Tom Hanks fan, I'm guessing.
Oh, well, gosh.
I was just told not to talk poorly of Tom Hanks.
Boy, we are just...
Look, I think you hit the nail on the head with that, and it's unfortunate. I don't think anybody needs to school Tom Hanks on being Tom Hanks, but I think if you look at his interviews lately, he really isn't connected.
No, he's not. This is the problem.
What this you said, he's not connected.
Yeah. No, I think this is the problem with especially a network like NBC. They don't get it. They're not living in reality. They live in this bubble that's L.A. And Peter Tolan and Lee and I, we talked about this, and Bruce Fretz. Everyone in L.A. kind of lives in this bubble, and they really don't know what's going on in other parts of the country with a younger demographic. Because I have friends, as Pat was joking about earlier, 27.
18 to 27.
18 to 27, I had to remember how old I am.
It's a crucial market, Matt.
Right, but I know what they want. I know what they watch. And it's not a small sample size. I get it. And I just watch these networks, and they don't get it. They don't.
Well, beyond that, Matt, no, of course, you're painting with a broad brush, but for a reason. And you're 99% right. But beyond that, you're dealing with people here, for the most part, who don't watch television, let alone know the target audience. They're okay with not watching television, or if they do, they watch screeners in their offices with these huge sound systems and screens. They don't necessarily relate to the way most people relate to television. They're a little disconnected.
Right.
That's why
that was my issue as well.
That's why I think, though, you're right about networks. I don't think they're done. I think what's going to happen is in the next 10, 15 years, a new group of younger people are going to come in, and I think they'll figure it out. I think they're going to figure out how to market it to a younger audience. I think it'll happen. I really do. I have a lot of faith in that.
Well, I think you see seeds of that with IFC and with Adult Swim.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is Well, listen, I don't want to go to a broad place either, but I was about to say by young people for young people, but I don't think they're all that young that are doing it. I think what they are is they're smart and in touch.
I agree.
Barely because they're of the age. I just think they're smart and in touch.
I agree. Well, we have 90 seconds left till we cut off and go into overtime. Then people can't listen live. Jim, would you mind coming on again in the next month or so and we can keep talking?
I'll be happy to. You be Mike Douglas, I'll be your co-host. I'll be happy to, whatever you need.
I'd love to. I'd love to. You got anything going on right now that you can talk about, any projects or anything?
I'm doing some consulting for a cable network, which is fun, and I'm doing a little writing on my own, and then I have an idea for a second class I'd like to teach, and I may go, if DePaul invites me back, I'll also go back to teach the original class that I...
Right, and Jim, you do know you can make my show whenever you want. that can happen whenever you feel fit. I'm just going to sit back and wait on you.
You got it in.
Yeah, well, I'll come in person if I'm in Chicago.
Oh, no. I'm talking about a TV show, Jim. Damn it!
I know what you said, and I was trying to get around it. I was trying to get around it diplomatically.
Yeah,
I know.
He was.
Oh, so that was he's saying he hates it.
No, he didn't say that. He's
and,
being
is that way it is.
No,
am
no.
I getting too Jew neurotic here and reading into things?
No,
I am. It's like Woody Allen. What?
Jew-rotic?
Why small serving.
Looks for that.
Well, I'm certainly I'm flattered and happy and thankful that you guys had me on and took on my questions and let me blather on the way I did.
Well, I'd love to talk to you soon, Jim.
Yeah, thank you.
I thank you both very, very much. It was really interesting.
Thank you very well. I'm glad it was interesting.
Interesting.
That's another word. See, he does this on purpose.
He's
he
good.
Wants me now to like delve into like, but see, I'm so negative. Yeah. I'm going to think it's interesting means shit.
Oh, God.
I use words that I know that are going to make Matt go crazy as he drives home tonight.
Yeah, as he walks,
as I walk upstairs
10 feet to his bedroom.
There you go.
Yeah, no, Jim, I'm going to be hearing about his neurotic doubts about
the
show. Oh, no, as
soon as he hangs up.
The minute we stop doing
the
show.
Well, what happens, Lee, every time we have guests on?
They hate me. No, yeah, they hate me. Right.
Peter Tolan had to write me, like, a 2-page email telling me how much he liked me in order for me to, like, believe it.
Yeah.
Because
should we just say right now that I hate you, or no?
Yeah, no, if you want to get out now that you don't like me, please do. That way I don't have to fret over it. It's not going
to
fret again either.
This is a project tonight and a conversation I look forward to, and I didn't have to do it, and I wanted to do it, and that should be a reflection on you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jim, and I'll talk to you very soon.
Excellent.
I'll look forward to it. Thank you both very much.
You're the best.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Well, now we're in overtime. So let's talk a lot because Caesar doesn't want us to talk in overtime.
Yeah, well,
Caesar, this is what Caesar wanted. We'll get to the Jim McCarron's compliments in a second. But I want you to know I got 100 messages during that show. Billy Bob, Tim, and Caesar. None of them constructive.
No.
No. Well, this is going to get edited out anyway, so who cares?
Right. This isn't going to be
but
in the
But basically, show. Caesar told me, let Jim do the whole show by himself. But I'm twisting words now, probably. He's going to say, can I read you the exact quote? Oh, he just messaged me. Let him go into overtime if he wants to keep going. That just happened. And then he just, let him go till the last second. Caesar does not want to hear us.
No. At all.
He wants to hear celebrities and executives.
Right.
But Lee, Lenny, Fricano, myself, fuck us.
Fuck us.
Fuck us in the ass. That's how he feels about it.
Especially that Fricano.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, now Lenny's going. He don't want any part of this. Lenny, you fucking.
Lenny, you fucking politician.
You fucking politician, Kanata. You're on.
I actually wanted to have a nice discussion regarding the Kaylee Anthony and Casey Anthony.
Oh, we could get to that. Oh,
you
did that?
No.
I'm picking up your fucking beef sandwich.
We have a couple things still to do.
Did you still want it? No, I'm having half of it. Fuck you, I'm having half of it.
All right.
I'm just kidding.
No, listen.
Oh, he's crying.
What did you feel about the Jim McCarron?
That was good. I do think we should.
Very intelligent.
I do think we should try and have some time constraint for our interviews, just so that
but I think with Jim it was different because he has a lot to talk, a lot of stories.
He does, but I could tell, you know, like a certain point in the interview when I could tell, like, if we wanted the person to be on again, they'd be on again.
Oh, he'll be on again.
Yeah, right. But
yeah, no, I knew halfway through, I'm like, man, I still got 100 questions.
Because we're going into overtime, like, all every week now, you know?
No, not last week, because we had 4 shows. We were all 2 hours last week. But, who cares about overtime, though? That's great.
Yeah.
We're in overtime.
All right, we're in overtime.
Look, I mean, here's the deal. I like doing longer interviews if the guests want to do them, especially if they have a lot to say. Now, if it was like one of these broads Caesar wants me to get on the show, I can't talk to them for more than 5 minutes.
Well, what are their names?
Yes, Minka Kelly. Let's do 2 hours on the phone. Paris Hilton. Tomorrow is Annabelle Gurwitch, actress. Writer, author of You Say Tomato, I Say Shut Up, and a political correspondent, we will call her, I guess. And Chaz Palminteri will be on. Lenny and I have our interview with the 2-time Oscar-nominated actor.
Chaz Palminteri.
Great
actor. I
odds are Lenny freezes up in the interview. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing.
Yeah. Boy, now if there was ever a case.
I go, Lenny, you got any questions? Hi, Chad.
Yeah.
He's so good. You're good in everything, Chad.
Yeah. If ever there was a case to be made for editing.
Oh, let's not go there.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. For our listeners who may or may not ever know, because this will be edited out too.
Right.
We did lose 25 minutes of a show last Friday. I know a couple people emailed me and were curious of why the show is only an hour and 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, it was originally 2 hours, so don't think we're running out of content because we did 4 shows that week.
No, don't think
I'm
that.
Which I'm sure some people may want to get across as a message.
And if you're asking how could that be, where did that missing show go, how could it be possible that could happen, it's happening.
It's happened.
Yeah.
We also have our FCC.
Right.
So, unfortunately,
it's fucking evil bullshit. It's okay. All right. Let's do this. Let's do a whole show where we're constantly.
By the way, I want you to know Billy Bob. Do you want to know what Billy Bob sent? But go ahead. What were you? Finish your thoughts.
Let's do a whole show where we're constantly referencing that, and then it'll just be too interwoven into the show.
No, we don't even need to reference it. I'm going along with it, and that's why I want to announce tomorrow's guest is Big Bird. And on Friday, Snuffleupagus. And we're doing totally G-rated stuff now.
Yeah.
So look forward to Barney on Monday.
And Michelle Obama on Tuesday.
Yeah, on Tuesday we'll have what are those little faggot Teletubby things?
Yeah, the purple one.
Oh! They went G-rated. What happened?
The faggot tubbies.
I said faggoty. Oh. Did I say faggot or faggot?
You said faggot.
Or faggot. Yeah. Or did I say faggot?
So, Lenny, wait. I think Lenny wants to weigh in on the Casey Anthony trial.
Yes,
because he's going to law.
No, we have a long show tomorrow.
Annabelle,
we have 2 interviews tomorrow.
Annabelle is not going to want to.
Only 30 though.
Chaz is 31 minutes.
Annabelle is not going to want to talk about the trial. I think
she may have an opinion, but I don't think she's going to want to delve into it.
Yeah, she's got to talk.
She has an opinion. Look, Annabelle is a really smart, classy broad. She's going to have an opinion on everything.
Yes,
you're going to ask her about the broad.
Absolutely. We're going to have every woman on and ask them about
broad. We're going to cover 2012.
Jennifer Candy likes broad. Steve can confirm. He's editing the interviews.
Right, and we're going to cover the 2012 election.
Right.
Okay.
What else do you want to cover?
2012 election? You want to cover that? Like we'll never have Annabelle on in 2012?
The presidential election. What's her take on everything?
Oh, about the GOP?
Yes.
Oh, that's true.
Obviously, we know who the Democratic nominee is going to be.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, you never know.
Al Gore?
Hey, go for it. I just read Bush v. Gore Tuesday.
Yeah, see, this is why I want to talk about
you.
He just started reading case law, so let me delve into this.
But Matt posted something on his Facebook, which was very interesting. None of you people followed the trial or really gave a shit about the girl, so why do you care now?
Because it's on TV.
Yeah.
That's why.
It's because the media told you how to feel.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel bad for the little girl, but go adopt a fucking kid.
I feel bad. I feel bad.
No. They're so eager to jump all over this.
Yeah.
But where are they doing themselves to? I volunteer.
Yeah.
Go do something.
Well, we talked about this earlier. It happens every fucking day in this country.
Yeah.
But they only care about this one because it was on the television.
I feel bad for dozens of people every year who are accused of crimes they didn't commit, thrown in jail, and in some instances executed because the police had to get their man. Convince the person that they did it and confessed. They confessed.
Yeah. It's kind of like I'd rather have 100 guilty people go free than an innocent person put to death.
Absolutely.
No, you guys keep talking for a minute. I'm returning an email to Jim McCarron.
Okay.
Could we prepare for a smoke break yet?
Maybe we're in overtime.
You know what? Let me set up the thing. Let me
do. We have 2 things set up. Right. Okay, yeah. I want to be able to listen to it, and I want to read you these Billy Bob Tim things before we get to the game because I'm really pumped about the game.
The game is gonna last. It's gonna last 1 minute. All right. No. Well, I'll do it.
I gotta hear it. I'm not gonna be able to hear it while I'm writing.
Okay. All right.
I mean, unless you just want to do the game with Lenny and I'm not involved.
No, it's okay. We'll wait.
You got something you can talk about for 2 minutes while I write an email?
Because
this is kind of about you too, Lee. So
I have to say,
important email.
All right. So what exactly was I liked about that interview? Jim McCarron shared his least 3 favorite things that he, which was using the term journey to describe someone's process or their arc that they go through. All right, that was one thing that he hated saying. What were the other two? Because I should have fucking written the other two down. I just wrote journey down. Jim's least three favorite. Content production or content. Yeah, I like that. And I like that he. See, that's the thing. Not everybody who's working in entertainment and show business feels that way about these goofy euphemisms and these like stupid PC things that they have to these hoops to jump through. I like that. Like he's not just some like part of the system. He's like an individual.
Are they having a right. private conversation again?
I don't know.
What's going on right next to me?
I don't know, but whenever there's a private
whenever they have to Stefano is in the fucking room.
They lost my cigarettes.
What happened with Mandy Patinkin or whoever that guy was? That
what about Mandy?
What happened?
Relax.
Oh,
now.
Mandy's just quit like a bunch of shows, and he's known to be very unstable, and a lot of people in Hollywood are kind of sour on Mandy Patinkin.
Unstable.
He quit Chicago Hope, didn't show up one day. Criminal Minds went into filming. This is the reason Joe Mantegna had joined the show. Criminal Minds was filming, and he just decided, I'm not going to work. They were filming. He just like, eh.
I love that, though.
He quit mid-filming, like they're calling him at his house. I hate it, because here's the thing. You're putting hundreds of jobs at jeopardy. There's no guarantee that show gets renewed once the star leaves.
Yeah.
And the cast members and all the people he puts in jeopardy, he's an asshole. Fuck.
I just like when
Mandy
people...
Mandy Patinkin, if you ever hear this, fuck you.
I like when people quit the quit a gig in that like high school way. Just no call, no show. Just fucking stop showing up. And the higher of a job it is, the funnier it is. You know?
Kind
of
like Bush when he was president.
Yeah, right. Well, no, I love that. Oh, yeah.
like
oh, that was great. That was great. All right, so after saying that, Lenny just high-fived. That was fucking funny.
I'm almost done writing emails.
Mikey F. So what's going on, guys?
Okay, so you want to hear these? Because I'm sorry, because someone's going to say we're out of content because we're sitting here.
Right.
All right, the Billy Bob. This is what he said about all of you.
All right.
You listened to the whole interview. Oh, yes. Steve makes a good point. Billy Bob did not even think I was at my computer this whole time, and someone else was talking to him.
Right.
Okay, so this is someone else and Billy Bob having a conversation. And now I understand why you fucks like busting me on the show. You all suck. Actually, I don't know anyone there, but Matt, I like him. But until I figure out the rest of the group, you're just a bunch of assholes. And I'm the smartest motherfucker that ever contacted your show.
Oh. What? How? What an incredible jackass.
Yeah. I'm wanting to talk to Matt, not the assholes that answer the emails during the show.
Oh.
Now that I think about it, there isn't anything out there that makes anyone want to run home and catch this show. Pretty sad, isn't it?
He used the term running home.
Are you fucking kidding me? You fucks are making me sick. And now I understand how you fucks bust on me at the beginning of the show. Yeah, we're a bunch of assholes.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Right.
That is from, there's more. I have no idea it was you I have no idea who it was that you featured on the show tonight. Because you've never heard of Google, and you wouldn't know how a successful company's run because you make golf clubs at home. Yeah, you cut down trees and make your golf clubs, and you make, you know, your... I'm not going to get into an insult war, but if you don't know who Jim McCarron's is, it's because you probably don't know anything about corporate anything. But those are the rich people that
the
are
rich
saving
people
our
that
country.
You love. Yeah.
You should be happy that rich person that saved. Oh, he just wrote to me again. All right.
So fucking ridiculous.
Was it fun busting on me before I got the chance to defend myself?
Yes.
I'm thinking the ass wipes that help you produce this show have more to do with it than you do. Guess who produces this show, ass wipe?
Yeah, really.
This ass wipe.
Yeah.
So, yes, and if you'd like to complain further, the phone number for Cesar Marconi is, hold on, I got to turn my phone on. I'm going to give it to you. You send him texts, and, Cesar will edit this out because we gave out his phone number on the air.
Yeah.
I should kind of give it to him. Yeah, well, I'm thinking.
Don't do that to him. He's a great producer. Why would you do that?
Yeah, he...
Go fuck your mother.
Right.
You filthy fucking
fuck
two-faced political ass fuck.
Fuck you in the neck.
Fuck you in the neck. Lee's going to cut a hole in your neck and fuck you till the blood is dry.
If it wasn't for him, this show wouldn't be possible.
No.
No, wait. Continue, Mr. Vague Generalities.
Politics. No.
Obama sucks. Why, Pat?
Yeah.
Taxes. What about taxes?
No, but listen,
Pat? I don't know. Politics. War.
He said that, and then he started grinning like a little bitch.
Hey.
Because he has nothing positive to say. He's just throwing out vague statements.
He does a lot of great things for the show.
He does a very good job
on the website.
Matt, read him some things that Caesar had to say about Pat on the show.
You better put that phone in airplane mode or Caesar's going to kill you.
I don't know if I should bring that up. You want to stir that pot? Maybe there's a certain person that works on this show that may not be here.
Yeah.
Who doesn't think you bring much to the table on the air.
Maybe he says some things about you that are really unkind. About your character.
Well, literally, didn't you just tell him that to his face?
About your character.
Politics.
Yeah, politics.
Pat, he says some things about your
character.
You know
what? Now that I think about it, Caesar may have a point.
Yeah, right.
You know what, though?
We say it to his face.
You know what, though? That's fine.
By the way, Billy Bob wants you all to know, you can all go fuck yourselves. Thank you very much.
Fuck you, hypocrite.
That's great.
He's very polite. That's polite. Thank you.
Well, he's a good debater.
Lenny's
going to get right on that.
That's the kind of sharp, snappy, witty retort that I would expect from a man who's smarter than all of us.
Is he ever going to call in?
He wanted to tonight during the interview with
McCarran. Call in, you coward.
Can I call him? You want to call him right now in overtime? Yeah. Billy Bob, let's do your Twitter game real quick.
All right.
Because this could last the rest of the time.
This is ridiculous.
So go ahead.
Okay, all right.
I'm going to get Billy Bob's number.
Right.
You talk.
All right. So what I wanted to share with you, the Taliban now has a Twitter account. They're on Twitter, okay? And they send out several tweets a day. They're big on it. And so I'm going to play a little game here. I'm going to ask you, which of these is an actual Taliban tweet? One of them is real, and the rest of them are ones that I wrote. Okay, so you're gonna guess the real Twitter tweet for the Taliban. All right, and I have a point that I want to prove here. All right, here's the first one.
Wait, what do we win?
Oh, God.
Could I eat Matt's beef sandwich?
Whoever guesses it gets the beef. Matthew Aaron show will win is that I won't say anything on the air that will be deleted, that will run the risk of being...
I'm getting hit on right now. I shouldn't have turned my phone off to begin with. I got to go. You guys do the show.
First one.
I'm going to go get laid.
Racial...
Will you stop throwing my oatmeal cream pie
God
cookies?
God damn it.
You disrespect little Debbie's
Are you leaving?
Good name.
Are you leaving?
I fucking sat down.
Lee.
I sat down and wrote
no,
content.
Leaving. I'm fucking with you. No, you can.
Where's could you? I want to hear that. I want to hear that.
Oh,
stop. Jesus Christ.
Oh God.
Oh my God, you are so fat.
Oh God. You're the fattest person. All right.
get him some a drink just in case.
Okay. All right, now I have to do this having just seen Matt ram an entire Little Debbie oatmeal cream pie into his mouth in one bite.
It was a little bit of happiness, wasn't it?
All right.
Stick another one in.
Fucking troublemaking grease balls. All right. All right. All right.
Lee, I want to hear these.
Here's the first tweet. Racially profiled at the airport again. I don't see the 80-year-old white woman getting searched. All right, that's the first one. Okay. OMG, did you see Katy Perry's dress at the MTV Music Awards? All right. The third one, this is about the movie Miral, which is a controversial movie about an orphaned Palestinian girl growing up in the wake of the Arab-Israeli war. Very serious drama. Miral, the feel-good romp of the year. Okay. Here's the next one.
That's what I'm going for.
Camel won't turn over. LMFAO.
Oh, Billy Bob just gave me a Google number. Continue.
Okay. The last one, declaring fatwa on new season of Kardashian whores.
Right.
That last one.
All right, what's what one is the real tweet?
Steve, what?
One about the movie? Okay.
Give me the answer, Steve. Cheat.
I don't have it written here. It's not, yeah.
The last one was the real one.
Okay.
Going
with the second one? Okay. None of those were actually on their Twitter account because their Twitter account is literally two killed in roadside bombs. Infidels. Three infidels
garbage
killed
right
in attack.
That's their
two
Twitter
infidels.
Account.
Yeah, it's literally like updates on infidels that are injured.
What is
they,
it? Just
they
like,
don't. They don't tweet on anything.
What is this? Taliban? Or?
Taliban. Yeah.
No. What's it? What's the name of the Twitter account?
Oh, it's at
Taliban.
At Taliban in Afghanistan.
No, it's not. Not at Taliban. No. No. I actually wrote all of those. Not a single one. Because their Twitter account sucks. Their tweets suck, and they don't.
Now Billy Bob asked me why we want to call him.
Oh.
Didn't he just say to call him?
Didn't he just
go
say
ahead,
he wanted
to
Taliban?
No. The bit's over.
You're ready? Okay, you're ready?
All right. I'd much rather watch you and Pat chucking cream pies at each other like
Billy
a couple
Bob
of goddamn special ed kids.
Yeah, I agree. Billy I Bob should call him.
Are we really calling him right now?
Well, Lenny, you're the one that said call him.
It's
why
a...
did I just try to upload
no.
him as audio, though? I can't call him.
All right.
We're in overtime. I'll have to call him tomorrow.
Right, we'll call him. Listen, you've been putting this off for too long.
I'm going to tell him right now, call during Annabelle Gurwitch.
Oh, God.
No,
because
he might get a little too aggressive.
Fuck
man,
that.
I hang up on him.
She's way smarter than he is.
Gurwitch is way smarter than
she'll
Billy
put
Bob.
The fucking gauntlet in him.
It'd be great.
Well, William Robert.
Wait, who wouldn't want to see that?
I'd love to. I just don't want her to get
you mean
Harry? And hate us because she had to argue with a guy named Billy Bob.
Yeah, what time tomorrow?
Wouldn't you?
Same as usual.
Right.
She's like,
better be here by 9, though. The Annabelle thing starts at 9.
Yeah,
like,
you
want to
be here by 9.
She's
so.
Like, I spent all this time doing comedy, yeah. being in films, and all the stuff I do for NPR. I thought my arguing with a guy named Billy Bob days were over.
Wouldn't it
nope.
be funny?
Not as long as the Matthew Aaron show is on the air.
So it's not even funny?
It's funny. It's a little funny.
Here's what I imagine, though. Wouldn't she then go tell her friends, I just spent an hour arguing with some guy named Billy Bob tonight?
Yeah. Well, she'll tell all
He's
her.
Still listening.
She'll tell her all
I
her...
want Billy Bob to go back
How's
and listen
still
to
listening?
That Chris Ronji interview. You can listen over time.
She'll tell Why? All her Hollywood commie pinko friends.
He knows what we're saying. He's telling texting.
But I thought you said we'd get cut off after.
I thought we did, too. Caesar usually just edits this portion out because we're not funny.
Yeah, the overtime gets cut.
Is there anything else we want to talk about tonight, or am I playing a song?
Play a song. Play the song.
Take us out.
On tomorrow's show.
Well, let's promote tomorrow. Go ahead, Lisa.
On tomorrow's show, we have NPR commentator, actress, host, author Annabelle Gurwitch, and we are for sure this time going to call our most bittersweet fan, Billy Bob.
And Chaz Palminteri.
And we will be playing a taped interview that Matt and Lenny did with actor Chaz Palminteri.
Definitely live.
You don't want to miss tomorrow's show.
It's going to be the livest interview. What's funny is it's so live. Lenny's going to leave the room and call in for the interview. And, yeah, super
Somehow.
Live.
And I'm just not...
Have a question
I'm
tomorrow.
Just... You know what?
And we're going to murder a bunch of broads in their underwear.
Which you only get...
Now, Caesar's going to cut that.
During the Chaz
which means
interview...
Which didn't even listen to Jim McCarron's interview.
During the Chaz interview, I'm going to be so awestruck that I'm not going to speak the whole time. It's going to be a bang-up show tomorrow. You don't want to miss it.
All right, I guess I'll play a song. Those that stuck with us and those that enjoyed Jim's interview, thanks for joining us. I want to thank Steve Weirich for editing our YouTube interviews. They're going to be going up in the next 2-3 weeks. We should have every interview up. There are going to be pictures to match the audio. It's going to look great. I'll get some new people listening to the show. And I also will have more updates for you tomorrow. So have a good night, people.
Later.
Blue.